I don't think there's anybody here that needs the emergency evacuation. Apologies for absence, Will. Have we got any?
We've got apologies from Councillor Rain.
And that's all. And who we're missing? We're missing Jim, are we? Yeah. And otherwise, a full house. Minutes of the meeting held on the 13th of June. I will move them. You second if you were here. No, you weren't here. Who was here can second. Thanks, Will. Any comments, additions, corrections, modifications? So you're happy if I sign those? So we better vote on that. Can we vote on those, please?
Unanimous.
Thank you, Will. Urgent business. I don't think I've any urgent business, as I can't hang onto various hooks as we go through, and I apologise if I'm not awake enough to have remembered something, and I'll have to break the rules and put it into urgent business when we get there. Declarations of interest. Have we got any declarations of interest? Yeah, I thought you were waving your
hand. Yes, I'll have to declare I was on the P&R minutes for the item 16, right at the end.
You were on P&R.
I was on P&R for that.
For that. Lovely. Thank you.
So I will extract myself if that's necessary.
I don't think it will be.
Fair enough.
I don't think it will be. But it'd be probably best if you don't take part. Just stay there till it's over. Chair's announcements. I've won for two for there. The first one is, and apologies for people being named the same as it were, but the Professor John Rain, so as to remove any confusion, the Professor John Rain's report has been around for some considerable time. We need to get that out into the public domain. It is at the present with the Chief Executive. I'd hoped to see the Chief Executive before this meeting, and it hasn't been possible. But we need to tie down a meeting to receive that back from her, get her report as to what's happened with it, and get it published into the public domain. So I'm raising that now. We can't fix a date for the meeting tonight, but it needs to be in the next... before our meeting in October, I would have thought. But we'll have to have a special meeting to do it. But it will probably all be in exempt, other than obviously the decisions that come out of it. So we'll do that when we get to it. The second thing is, I've been given a juggling job to do in relation to the between the internal audit and Anton and the annual governance statement. And I will be wishing to make a change to the annual governance statement, which is part of the annual accounts. So I was told to just point out to the external auditors that we would, and Mandy, etc., that we will not be approving the annual accounts tonight. And when everybody sort of picked themselves up off the floor, we'll be waiting till we've had the internal auditor's report so that we can then make an amendment to the annual governance statement if the committee decides that it wants to do so. I've gone through that another sentence. There is one item in the internal auditor's report that I think may be worth us picking up and putting into the annual governance statement. But as we're wanting to approve the annual governance statement before that report, we'll do the annual governance statement, the whole of the account, the annual governance statement, everything else, and then leave the decision until we've had the internal audit report. We have another mechanical problem, just to keep me from getting bored, and that is there is in the internal audit report an exempt item which you have all seen. I'd like you to consider something along with that. Have a think and a glance at those pink papers or pink screen or whatever it's come up as exempt in your paperwork. I've had questions on that. I've asked them in the pre-meeting to find out where they were. There was a string of questions and a string of non-answers, because my answers were particularly John Clark and awkward. And to that extent, I was of the feeling that we ought to not leave it on tonight's agenda, ask them to defer the content of those pink papers and bring them back at a future point. I'm highlighting that now so that before we get to the report, you can have had a look through, because if we want to refer to those papers, then we're going to have to ask the public to leave, and I think we're still going to have questions that we will want answers to. So unless you have anything, a burning issue, I think we just leave that there. Don't refer to it tonight other than it exists, and then we look at it at another point. So I hope that is clear. Right, we now move on to item 7, the statement of accounts. Anton, this is your highlight of the year.
Okay, I'll introduce this, and I think the external auditors will probably also want to say a few words around it. This is a very lengthy report, but it contains a number of papers. The first in Appendix A is the actual statement of accounts itself. And within that, we published the draft statement of accounts back by the end of May. And the auditors have been continuing to work, or the external auditors continue to work with the finance team. And I'll just note, many of you will know Mandy, who's at the back, who's done a sterling job in ensuring that we have completed the accounts. And sitting next to her is another John Rain, not Professor John Rain. I don't think you're a Professor John Rain.
Not yet.
John Rain, who's head of finance at the County Council, who's been also supporting Mandy and Michelle and others put together the accounts. So we have the statement of accounts. We brought two members. We had a special policy and resources committee in May, just before the publication of the draft accounts, where for the first time we notified members what the outturn position was, which we 1.4 million underspend in 18-19. This doesn't change any of this. This is very much the mechanical, massive statement. There is a note in the report saying that we are hoping, the external auditors are hoping to sign this off, and I'm sure they'll talk about this by the end of July, which is our timetable now for the second year. It used to be the end of September. Some of you are aware that all councils in the country were faced with a bit of an issue just a matter of weeks ago around pensions and accounting for pensions, which relates to something called the McLeod judgment, which is around potential discriminatory payments in the past. And without going into it in any great detail, it essentially means that we had to, once that was made literally only a few weeks ago, I think 3 weeks ago, every council had to then look at restating its pension liabilities. This has no impact on what I call the real stuff, which is our, you know, operating revenue account. It's to do with the pension fund. Nevertheless, we have had a revaluation done. Finance and Mandy have been putting that through the statement, so we actually have a revised statement which changes a number of the figures on the report that you have. We're hoping that we'll be in a position to be able to table that revised statement to Pulse and Resources tomorrow, who are actually the committee that approve the accounts. But as I say, it has no real impact on the real stuff other than pension. And then again, I'm sure external auditors will come in on this, asking that, as we've done in the past, that we'll ask Pulse and Resources that just to finalise those, that Pulse and Resources agree that should there be no material difference to anything, that we'll be able to do that, myself as Section 151 officer with the external auditors over the next few days in time for the 31st of July. So sorry, that's a big explanation about an issue which is blown way out of proportion with the impact on our lives, but there you go, that's accountancy. The other three items in here, one is the letter of representation, which the Chair of Policy and Resources and the Chief Exec will sign tomorrow after approving the accounts. There's the what's called the ISA 260 report, which I know the external auditors will talk about, which is their opinion of us. And finally, and we'll probably come back to this at the end, is the annual governance statement, which John's referred to. The annual governance statement is part of the statement of accounts, but what we've also done attached to this is just a kind of sweep-up of last year's annual governance statement. The committee expressed a desire to see where we were with the actions that we said we'd carry out last year, and just an update on that. So, sorry, it's a bit of a lengthy introduction, but it's a lengthy paper, so happy, it might be worth handing over to...
I'm going to hand over to Gareth to hear his words of wisdom along with yours.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, thanks, Chair. So this is our ISA 260 report. It's a summary of our findings on the 18-19 audit as we head towards the end of our first year as the Council's external auditors. So I'm happy to take the committee through this document. It's probably our key document of the entire year, so happy to take through some of the key messages within it. So if you go to pack page 119 or page 3 of the actual report, headed up headlines, we've put there that obviously based on our audit work to date, a key message is that we haven't found any adjustments thus far that impact on the usable reserves of the council, i.e. the actual reserves that you've got to use as a council. There are no audit adjustments to those. We've got a small number of adjustments that we have agreed. So the McLeod one has already been flagged up by Anton. And again, just to emphasise, whilst there's some big numbers involved in that, they don't actually affect the usable reserves of the authority. We also list there some of the work that's ongoing. Some of those have moved on in the week or so since this report was finalised. We're still working through one or two issues with Anton and Mandy and the team, with an expectation of getting that closed off by next Wednesday, the 31st of July. And if all that goes to plan, we should issue a clean audit opinion by next Wednesday. Just over the page, headlines continued, we flag up the value for money conclusion. And on that particular issue, we have raised a qualified except for audit opinion on the value for money conclusion. And that's essentially in relation to arrangements that were not in place in 17-18 or indeed in the early part of 18-19 around sort of risk management and financial monitoring. We are aware of the council's sort of new senior management team that have come in during 18-19 to change some of that, and some of those changes did take place towards the sort of second part of 18-19. But because we're giving an opinion on the full year, we felt it appropriate to draw attention to that in the opinion on the value for money conclusion. Because that value for money opinion is not a standard one, we had to go through a proper process within Grant Thornton in terms of a consistency panel to make sure that as a firm they were comfortable with the proposed approach that we were taking here at Rydell, and they confirmed that they were satisfied with our proposed qualified except for opinion on that. Then we go into sort of the main body of the report. I'll just try and draw out one or two things as we turn the pages. So on page 5 or pack 121 on the summary page, I just highlight there the fact that we actually adjusted our materiality figure following the findings from our interim audit, which we reported to this committee back in June. We felt that the issues we'd identified during our planning and interim work were sufficient enough to, I guess, increase the level of risk on this particular audit, and as such we've reduced our materiality accordingly, and that led to sort of additional sample sizes in our testing to make sure we could get that comfort that the council's accounts were materially accurate. We then go into various significant risks. Nothing really to draw to attention there, other than on the pension fund side, we've already talked about the McLeod judgment and the sort of 700,000 increase on the pension fund reserve, but again, not affecting the bottom line, if you like. And we also highlight on page 8 of our report our work on the valuation of land and buildings. We highlighted one or two issues on our initial work on that, which were brought to the attention of the finance team, and they have been updated in the revised version of the accounts. And again, a bit like the McLeod issue, whilst those adjustments have been put through, they don't actually affect the usable reserves of the council. Just moving on through the report, the next thing I'd probably point out is around going concern on page 12 of our document, or page, bear with me one moment, 128 of your pack. So we review the overall sort of financial position of the council, the level of reserves, the budget that's been agreed going forward, and we're satisfied that obviously Anton's reached a judgment that there are no going concern issues at Rydale as Section 151 officer, and there's nothing to suggest that judgment is inappropriate based on our review. Other communication requirements just on the next page, I think just worth drawing out line 4 on that written representation. So there will be a letter of representation that tomorrow night's committee will sign. The only thing that's non-standard about that is the addition of a paragraph around the council's not adjusting for the unadjusted misstatement that we flag, and I'll talk through later on page 23 of this report. But other than that, nothing really to draw attention to there. We then move into section 3 of the report on the value for money work, and again that just highlights some of the reasons and background to why we've had to draw attention to the council's arrangements in the prior year and indeed the early part of 18-19, and why that's led to the qualified except for audit opinion for this year. For transparency, on page 134 or 18 of our document, we have to highlight any other audit work we do in addition to the standard accounts and value for money work. So we're also appointed auditors to the housing benefit claim of just less than 11,500, which we flagged there. And then there's a non-audit piece of work that will be taking place in 19-20 around sort of a place analytics database review that will help inform management some of their decision making. As I say, it doesn't relate to 18-19, but for transparency reasons, we know that that's been agreed with our analytics team, and we include it in this document for completeness. We then go into the various appendices. So we've raised recommendation around sort of embedding the governance, risk management, financial monitoring arrangements, which we know that the council is on with, and that's recommendation 2. And then a point around the valuation of land and buildings and some of the issues that we identified on initial review this year to try and mitigate that particular omission occurring again in 19-20. Appendix B is audit adjustments. I think the key thing to draw to the committee's attention there is the end column, where we're saying that there's no impact on those two adjustments in terms of the available reserves of the authority. We've got various sort of minor presentational changes on page 22 of our paper, or 138 of the pack. Again, relatively short list of changes on a document of that size. There was one unadjusted audit balance of £25,000, which we discuss on page 23. Because of its value of only £25,000, the fact that management don't wish to adjust for that in this year's accounts, we have to report it because it's over our trivial reporting threshold of £19,000, but it's not going to prevent me giving a clean opinion on the accounts by next Wednesday. Our fees are noted on Appendix C on page 140. I think the point just to flag there, as we put in the paper to this committee last month, is there is likely to be an additional fee over the scale fee of £32,000. We've discussed that with Anton. It's mainly in relation to the additional work we've done on the value for money conclusion this year, and in addition to that, obviously the extra work around the McLeod judgment and some more detailed testing on fixed assets in light of the adjustment that we identified. We've agreed that fee with Anton. We'll flag it up again in our annual audit letter, which we're due to agree with management next month, and it'll come to this committee in October. It is worth knowing that any sort of final approval of an additional audit fee is subject to PSAA agreement. So even if Anton and I and this committee might agree to that particular fee, ultimately it's down to PSAA whether they agree to that or not. And then lastly, Appendix D is the proposed opinion. So the first part of this is a standard, clean, unqualified opinion on the account side of things. And then in the sort of latter half of it, when we talk about use of resources, we just flag up the qualified except for paragraphs there on page 143 on the left-hand side. And if all goes to plan in terms of the outstanding audit work that we're currently working through, we would hope to sign this by next Wednesday, Chair. So that, I appreciate I've gone through that in a little bit more detail than normal on one of our reports, but given its significance, it's probably our key document of the year. Thought it worthwhile to go through it in some detail, and obviously if members have any questions, then Talina and I will try to answer them, Chair.
Thank you, Gareth. Anybody got any questions? None at all. Right. In which case, take me a little bit by surprise, not that I thought for a second there was anything wrong with the account or the auditing, but I thought there might have been a little more interest. Do we now leave that and move on? Or is somebody going to cover the annual governance statement next? That'll be the next thing. But yeah.
Shall I do that?
Yes, please. I think that's the next thing to do.
So, as part of the actual statement of accounts, and I think this is on page... There's two parts to it. The first bit starts page 89. So the annual governance statement forms part of the statement of accounts. You have seen a version of this. We did bring this to the last committee meeting, and we have updated this in line with comments that were made at that meeting and after that meeting. So it's just really to note what we're saying about annual governance, and particularly a key section is actually called Key Issues, and it starts on page 96, and this highlights what we believe are the key governance issues for the 2019-20 financial year. And so you've seen this, we've gone through this at the last meeting, and we did add two additional issues following that meeting at the bottom, one on climate change and one on council plan and priorities. So it's really just noting that and noting, I suppose, that that will be approved or otherwise as part of the accounts tomorrow. The second part of it is, and I won't go through this in detail at the moment, but I'll just refer to it, Appendix D, where I mentioned previously, this is looking back to see what we said this time last year. We did bring an update to the Audit Committee, the Scrutiny Committee, I think around December, January time. And this is kind of just noting the kind of sign-off for the last financial year. So some of the key issues that we identified last year will continue as key issues in future, particularly around financial management. Some will go off elsewhere, for example, to the risk register to continue. And there are a number of new ones, as I've said, including things like climate change, economic development, and so on.
Thank you, Anton. We've raised a question. That's good. Will.
Yeah, no questions before, John, doesn't mean lack of interest. It means
it
means complete understanding of a beautifully explained set of numbers.
Yes, I assume that, but I wondered why you weren't. I wondered why you weren't, with your skills and expertise in accounts, adding some. Of your additional thoughts to it.
I wish I'd just kept my head down. just a point, within the government statement, is it assumed, is it detailed, that the relationship between the responsible officers and the council, i.e. the members, will automatically be handled through the existing committee structures and everything that we have? Is that a... It's just that there's officer responsibility for everything. I just wonder within the government statement whether there needs to be some explanation of the relationship with members in terms of where their responsibility comes into it all, or is it just within the workings of the council?
There is some reference to particularly overview and scrutiny committee, and that's probably the main one. It's whether... we need to be more explicit in some of that. I'm always very grateful for suggestions on the annual governance statement.
I've noticed those. I don't know the answer to the question, which is why I'm asking it. It may be something that just maybe needs some thought. Okay. In terms of, is everybody happy that it is linked enough together? I don't know the answer. Okay.
I think, Will, that's a very interesting question, and I refer you now to the economic development need to ensure sufficient emphasis, etc.
That's exactly where I'm looking.
I thought it may be. And I made a note here, and I don't think it's worth changing anything. But it says here, resources to fund additional, not the posts we had, but additional economic development capacity has been agreed. And I don't think there's any point in asking the question publicly other than to give you it as a rhetorical question. I put when and by whom. Now, that doesn't need answering tonight, but it does need. I think that is a strand that we need to watch as the balance between members and officers and where things come from and where they're going from. And if you like, it's all part of, which for at least 5 years on this council has been very lax, and that is the distinction between... I think it's the simple phrase that I... got more years ago than I care to remember, and that is officers recommend and members decide. And I don't mind recommendations coming to do anything, but members should be making decisions as to what and where. And I think that's a perfect example, because I don't think there's a what and a where, and I don't think there's been a massive expansion, but I'm happy to leave that one. At that point, I think you've made your point by asking the question. Any other questions? Because I've got a couple, but anybody else? I'm glaring into sunshine, so wave viciously if there is. Mine refers to the local plan. And I'm happy for this to be left as a decide and change later, because this is a working document, or Anton to change it depending when he gets the answers to the questions. But I have a feeling that the local plan has to be reviewed by 2023, which is the target date we've got on here. But I think that's when the government inspector has finished inspecting and comes back to us. And the government inspector inspecting could come back to us and say, no, it's not good enough, you need to change that. So whenever that deadline is for the plan, 2023 at some date, we need to be finished a year before that, because my understanding is that planning inspectors at Bristol are 6 months plus behind. So that means it might be 9 months from us finishing everything to them coming back, doing it, 3 months before they report to us, a week before the deadline, and them saying, you've got to do this, this and this. So on that basis, I think that target should be at a minimum of a year before the whatever. So could I propose, if everybody's comfortable with that, and if Gary Housen, etc., isn't comfortable with that, and there's something wrong with it, we can, you know, come back and change it in future. But I think you need something done to, like, propose that the target date for that is at least a year before it needs to be signed off by the inspector. I think that covers it, but I'll leave the wording to be twiddled around by the wordsmiths. And I think that covers it. Have I a seconder for that? Oh, sorry, I did. That's even more difficult for me to see. Far too close for me to focus on. And she hasn't learned to nudge me yet. That's what you do. Right. Those in favour of that amendment, or against, or whichever. And you're happy with that, aren't you? It's a bit late. We voted for.
What is the actual amendment?
We're just saying that it should be finished by the council. The council's target should be a year before the target date.
Fine.
Before the date when the inspector has to decide. And I'm quite happy for you and Will to tidy that wording up to make sure that that's what it comes out as meaning. And if it can't be done in planning terms, Gary to join in and tidy it up. I just want it to be right and not left too long.
Okay.
Because not having a plan is a disastrous position for a local authority to be in, as some of us who watched certain developers chomping round Rydale in the past know, to our cost.
That was 7 votes for and 1 abstention, Chair.
Sorry?
7 votes for and 1 abstention.
Thank you all. That's brave voting for something that's as woolly as that, but I think the message is clear.
Yeah.
Right. I think that is the accounts signed up, all done, except we're not going to note them or anything at this point, because we may have that thing from internal audit to come up later. We now move on to internal audit, and can I ask before we do, rather than move into exempt, is there anybody wanting to bring those orange papers into discussion tonight, or are they happy for them to come back at a later point when we can do it in exempt at that point, when we may have more of the answers than we've got? So anything anybody's urgently wanting to discuss on those? No? 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 In which case, can I ask you to present your report, and can I ask you to defer, I think, rather than withdraw that exempt paper for tonight? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The first report we're bringing tonight is Agenda Item 8, which is in two parts. At Annex A, we've got the annual report of the Head of Internal Audit on page 155. And in Annex B, we're providing a brief update on counter-fraud activity in 2018-19, and that's on page 177. In relation to Annex A, the annual report of the Head of Internal Audit, it's a requirement of public sector internal audit standards that the Head of Internal Audit brings a report every year to the relevant committee, which is this committee at Rydale, giving an opinion on the framework of governance, risk management and control based on the work that we've undertaken during the year. This report provides that opinion, which is set out in paragraph 7 on page 158 of the report, and you'll see that we're concluding the framework provides reasonable assurance. In giving that opinion, we're also required to note any significant control weaknesses that arise during the course of our work, and you'll see that at paragraph 7 we have also made reference to the need to make improvements in relation to some internal financial controls. Other things that we have to provide according to the standards when giving our opinion include things such as details of our quality assurance framework. So if you see, for example, paragraphs 5 and 6 on page 157 and appendix 4 of the report on page 167. Other parts of that Head of Internal Audit report include things such as a table showing work completed during the year, which you'll be familiar from seeing as part of our regular update reports during the year, and further details of internal audit work completed since the last time we reported to this committee. Similarly, the information in Annex B is similar to the information you will have seen during the year summarising counter-fraud work that we've undertaken. We would be happy to take any questions on the report.
That's the trouble with complying with Will. Kick off without the microphone on. Any questions? Will?
From my own understanding, page 158, paragraph 7, provides reasonable assurance. My experience of things like audit is that there are normally a number of fairly well-defined words that people use to define. Could I just understand, if you like, the spread of assurances that there are and where reasonable assurance sits in that, please?
So overall we've got five levels of assurance, running from high assurance, substantial, reasonable, limited and no assurance.
Lovely. Thank you.
Well, there must be something on tonight, so we'll give everybody an incredibly easy time, as it were. Any other questions and comments?
Make a comment, Chairman, if I may.
Yes, please.
It's a well-presented document. It's taken some getting through, and I have gone through it, and I was going cross-eyed at one time doing so. And I'm going even more cross-eyed tonight because I haven't got my glasses with me, so I'm having to expand the page to see it. But from what I was reading the other day when I was going through this, it's well presented and gives a good picture from both our audits and from our officers. I have no qualms or quivers or frights or fears of anything that I've read within this document this evening when I was reading through it the other day. Quite happy to see it go up and progress forward.
Thank you, John. While we're at that point, in case I forget later on, thank you, everybody, external and internal auditors, all four of you have been superb. Discussion, superb presentation, superb content, and a lot of, as far as I'm concerned, questioning work, not questionable, but questioning work, looking as to what we're doing and keeping everybody on their toes. And I think that's exactly what audit should be doing. And the trouble with that being treated in my direction, it keeps me on my toes, and that's probably not good for anybody. And the one I would like to highlight, and it's going back to Will's comment about levels of assurance. And the only one here that's this time round of limited assurance, we had limited assurance back in April in relation to the previous year's budget, and that was so far out, I'm surprised it even got as high as limited assurance. But we've got on this one limited assurance for transparency. And it says here, four of the 15 sets of data, and I assumed at that point it was going to be, were found to be missing or whatever. And it says, four of the 15 sets of data covered by the Local Government Transparency Code were correctly published. So that means 11 weren't. And I've had quite long questioning and saying, what is going on with this, what is happening with it? And I've got reassurance, to me, that it looks as though they've all been sorted and got on top of. And then I thought, hang on a minute, this subject is transparency. And me knowing that it is being sorted and looked after is fine, but that in terms of the public is not very transparent. And on that basis, I'm asking that this area where we've only got quality assurance of transparency goes on to the annual governance statement so that we can see it through, so that it moves from where it is now limited assurance. And I think that might have done well to have got, if it's got limited assurance, if it's only got four right out of 11, but out of 15, but I'm not going to look into that any further. But we need to have a target date and a fact that it has been checked and it is done in line with the annual governance statement. And on that basis, I'm proposing that we put that into the annual governance statement, and earlier on I put some wording in Will's direction as to and Anton's as to what we would put into the annual governance statement. Have you got that, Will? And again, I really don't.
Yes, yeah, I'm happy. So I think it's in the annual governance statement. We do have a section on general governance issues, but I'd be more than happy to specifically address this, include words along the lines of to include that we ensure that we are compliant with the transparency code. So it highlights. Yeah. It's one of a number of governance issues we're dealing with, but yeah. Happy to highlight that. With a target date of October, which fits in with the other governance issues, and that also fits in with the next time the committee will review.
Yeah. Just to add to that, Chair, if I may, I think it's I guess a good example of good practice of this committee that, you know, we've got the annual governance statement before us, and it is a live document up until the point it's signed, and clearly there's an issue being flagged by internal audit that, you know, you're prepared to update that annual governance statement to reflect it. And certainly other local government and NHS bodies that I'm involved with, you know, limited assurance internal audit reports are typically flagged in the annual governance as key issues that need to be monitored and dealt with in the coming 12 months. So, you know, I'd be supportive of, you know, the committee updating that report in light of the finding from internal audit.
That makes me very nervous, having external auditor and the 151 officer saying that I've got it right. I think I may quit now while I might be ahead. So on that basis, can I move that the officers include the limited the transparency in relation to the limited assurance in the internal audit report on the annual governance statement? Thank you, John. It'll be quick. And that leaves the wording down for you to do completely. Yeah. And ask for it to happen. Fine. We now know where we're going, so the Mandy and the external auditors can stop having a nervous attack that we might be about to sling out the accounts, but I think we've finished with the internal audit now. Is there anything else in terms of the internal audit and the counter-fraud that we have to cover? No. Yes. You two covered everything you want to cover. No, let's finish this item. I mean, it's bad enough as it is with that. So, like, we won't not do the accounts. I'd realised I'd got. I knew I had three of them in a nervous twitch. I'd realised I've now got four people concerned about the whole of life. Yes. Go as slow as you like. It's leaving these four more than concerned.
Thank you, Chair. Again, this is a report we bring annually, this time summarising work done to review the counter-fraud framework at the Council. This includes a review of the counter-fraud policy, the strategy, and our high-level counter-fraud risk assessment. We've also included some background information on the wider counter-fraud environment from paragraph 7 on page 184 in the report. And we've also included CIPFA's latest counter-fraud and corruption tracker report in Appendix 1. In relation to the counter-fraud policy, the report notes at paragraph 9.3 on page 185 that we've reviewed that, but we're not recommending any updates at this current time. In relation to the strategy, the original strategy was drafted in 2016-17, and we reviewed and revised the actions annually since then. Appendix 2 on page 209 presents the latest update to the actions, including progress and new actions required. In the next year or so, we do expect to review the overall strategy, but we're waiting on a new national strategy for counter-fraud in local government to be published, and we expect that sometime in 2020. We've also included a summary of our counter-fraud risk assessment in exempt Appendix 3, which we will bring back to a future meeting.
Thank you.
Happy to take any questions.
Any questions, comments? John?
Just generally, how widespread or active is fraud taking place in local authorities? Are there figures available?
There are. Part of the problem with fraud is it's we know what we find, but potentially there's a lot of fraud out there that we don't find. So, I mean, if you look at reports like the Fraud and Corruption Tracker, that will identify of those councils that have reported as part of the survey how much fraud has been found in different areas. So we've got those kind of hard facts. And, yes, overall, the estimates of counter-fraud against local government are in the billions, I think. So it is a significant issue.
Different chances were expected.
I've one comment, I think, one and a half. 8.3. The counterform trade produces 24,659 of savings for the council. And I go on with that one. It is savings for public bodies who get put in their precept through council taxes, but it is not a saving for this council. And I will go on nudging appropriately to see if we can get others who are benefiting from it to pay something towards it. That's not a criticism at all. I mean, I agree exactly what John said about your reports. It was, they're spot on, the right area. But, and the invoice is, seems fine, but the who's paying is, has got a question mark with it. And the only question, and I really don't need an answer now, but it is, oh, can I thank you ever so much for the figures that Jonathan and I have disagreed on for about 3 years now, have carried forward and whatever, because they didn't tally, and they're now sorted and brilliant. You put in what's taken, what have we added to it, what have happened to each one of them, and what are we left with? And that's absolutely brilliant. And will you thank Jonathan for his share in that massive computer job that struggled to get there, but it's there now, which is brilliant. Lovely, thanks. And there is the one question which you can probably give to Jonathan to work on over the next year, etc. The majority of referrals for council tax and business rates, 53%, and the council tax, 44%. So that's 97. In addition, one internal referral was received this year, and one referral relating to external parties. Is there an explanation for that, Lotta? Am I losing the will to live? Because I couldn't understand it. 8.2.
I think across most of the councils that we do work for on the counter-fraud side,
yeah,
we tend to see more referrals for council tax fraud and business rates fraud.
Yeah.
So that's why they're higher, if that's the question you're asking.
Well, no, not really. I mean, they're higher, but what's the split, if you see what I mean? Is it 53% of all the complaints we have, and it's out of how many? I don't know how many, well, I probably should, but how many businesses are paying us business rates, and what those numbers are as a percentage. You remember, there's more. I don't need to know it now, but there's enough there to get you interested, but not enough there to give you the answers. And you're left with, what's an external party?
Just to pick up a couple of those points then. So in relation to the percentages, they relate to the split of our caseload, or
yeah,
the split of our...
Yeah, I understand that, but that doesn't tell me what percentage of
the total,
i.e. who's doing it and who isn't, etc. Yeah.
And we can certainly provide more information,
yeah,
on that.
And there's no rush at all. It's just almost for next year when it comes in. That would be useful information, because I'm asking the question to go with it, but it's not there. It doesn't need to be there now.
And the comment about external parties, that could be anyone who is not working for the council who may be committing fraud against the council. Probably clumsy wording on our part.
I'm trying to work out, that that's what I thought it read at first reading, and then I thought, hang on, are they defrauding the council through council tax or business rates, or are they doing it some other way? And it doesn't.
That's some other way, but clearly,
yeah,
we need to clarify. Yeah.
Okay, lovely stuff. A very petty and minor comment in relation to a thorough report, and thank you ever so much. And as usual, it keeps us on our toes, and it's good and it's spot on. Now having made a complete and utter administrative mess of the whole meeting, now I've got to try and sort it out. I think the first thing we've got to do, as that is what we're dealing with, is item 8. I'm there. Members are asked to, and I won't read it, I will read it all out for the tape, sorry. Note the results of the audit and counter-fraud work undertaken in 18-19, B, note the overall opinion of the head of internal audit regarding the overall framework of governance, risk management and control operating within the council. C, note the significant control issues identified through internal audit work in 1819. And D, note the outcome of the quality assurance and improvement programme and the confirmation that the internal audit service conforms with the public sector internal audit standards. I move. Second it. Have I not done that? I knew I was going to go to sleep. I told you to wake me up if I went to sleep.
That's 8 votes for and 1 abstention. That's carried.
But having that delay there has given me a chance to get the next one sorted out. And the next one is item 9, and the recommendations are approve the updated counter-fraud and corruption strategy action plan, and B, comment and note on the analysis of current fraud risks faced by the council. And I think the second one is partly what we've got in the exempt papers. So we'll just take your discussion or your comments onto that and do it at a fuller level later. But we'll move it as it stands at the moment.
That's unanimous, Chair.
Unanimous again. Thank you both ever so much. You're welcome to depart, stay, whatever takes your fancy for a Thursday, or except it's Wednesday this time, Wednesday evening. Lovely. Thank you both very much indeed. Now, do we have to now decide whether we put you two out of your misery and Mandy and John out of the misery and... I don't know. Do we? I suppose we ought to do. So we're now on to page 9. Pardon? Yeah, whichever. We haven't done what we have to do with the accounts yet. Can you not see the nervous look on Anton's face? So, page 9, recommended 2.1, note the 1819 Statement of Accounts, Appendix A, note the proposed Letter of Representation, Appendix B, note the External Auditor's ISA 260 document, Appendix C, note the update on actions agreed as part of the Annual Government Statement, as amended for last year. And then we've picked up the amendment, have we not, from the internal audit report? Yes. So we just need that last one with annual government statement as amended. Have I a seconder? Oh, you've done that, have you? Oh, you're getting... This is item 7, Jim. Yes, I know it seems as though we're doing it backwards and forwards. I'm not going to explain now. It took me over 5 minutes last time, and I don't know how many people were still with me when I'd finished.
That's 8 votes for, Chair, and 1 abstention. That's carried.
Right. Oh, it's my favourite. No, it is. It's my favourite now. This is the bit I've been waiting for all evening. Treasury Management Annual Report. Anton.
Okay. I will very briefly introduce this. This is
the again, it's a look back. It's the 2018 annual report, so it refers back to the policy that we set over a year ago. It includes some, and I'll just briefly go over these. It includes some information in terms of performance. I think everyone, I don't need to go into detail, everyone has been aware, is aware of some of the issues that are affecting investments across the world at the moment, but in this country, particularly around things like value of stock market, pound, Brexit, etc. So it has some information there in general terms, and also there is quite a lot of detail in the report, both in the actual report and in the two annexes, around just exactly how we have invested the money and rate of return and so on. So I'm not planning to go through this in any great detail. If you have any detailed questions, I will try and answer them, or I'll ask John to help me out on these. that's not a challenge.
Thank you, Anton. I won't say a word. That's probably best at that point. Anybody, any questions, comments, thoughts, Treasury Management? I can never understand this. I find this the most stimulating item that goes through the council. So I've only got two thoughts and questions for Anton. And the first one is investment in overseas banks. That number has fallen. Is there a reason for that?
John, can you help me out on this one in terms of the... We did.
Yeah, sure.
Do you want
to... at last, somebody who specialises...
He's travelled all the way.
Good evening, John.
Good evening, thank you. In terms of the overseas banks, the investments as at the point in time will just depend on the availability of rates, liquidity, yield, the options available to the council for investment at that point. So there won't be a conscious decision to move away from investments in overseas banks, more an investment decision at that point in time.
So is that based on the fact that you're confident that the pound is going to stay as strong as it is, or not?
No, the investments are based on... We use the creditworthiness assessment provided by our treasury management advisors, who are Link, and they provide us with a range of banks who they assess as being creditworthy based on our risk appetite according to our strategy. So we will base our investments around that strategic approach, and there won't be a conscious decision to move away from the overseas banks at that point. Each bank is assessed on its own creditworthiness rather than where they are domiciled. The nationality of the bank will come into the creditworthiness assessment, if that makes sense.
And does Brexit feed into that?
Yes, it will do. The exposure to risk factors will be included in Brexit will be high on that list.
Thank you. I have one further question. Do I ask the guru directly, or
I might be able to answer this one.
You might be able to answer this one. Okay then. Right. A year ago, we were asking, as long as the risk wasn't too high, taking John's point on board, whether or not it would be good with this amount of capital we have to invest, whether or not we should invest in a credit union that people locally would use. I wonder if somebody could update me as to how that's coming along.
Yeah, I can come in on that one. So because this refers to the 18-19 policy, there's nothing in here about credit unions. What we said for 19-20 is we will look at that as part of the overall capital strategy. So we're doing that. We've not got there yet, but you're more likely to see the results of that in when we bring an update in October, I think. But for this particular report, it's not included because this refers to last year. But it's still on the agenda. We've not lost sight of that.
So as I've been nice to you all evening, I'm just wondering how you would respond to a question if somebody were to ask you it.
Yeah.
Why, if it was this question was asked June, July last year, why nothing happened in the 9 months to the end of March in terms of investments?
Two reasons. I don't think it was June last year. I think it was just...
A bit later than that.
Yes, it was. It was the end of the year. And as I say, because we'd already set our approach. And it's a timing issue.
Yeah. Lovely. So we look forward to it, hopefully, in the next 12 months. Thank you very much indeed. Hello, have I stimulated your interest in Treasury? I knew I would do it at some point. Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, the one thing that keeps me awake this evening is Treasury management.
Just picking up on, if I can, on John's point, given the circumstances we're in politically and economically and that all might, are we comfortable with the risk strategy that we have? Is that something that we review on a... I can't remember what the review mechanism is for in terms of... I mean, I know in my own, you know, sit down with my financial man and we talk about the different levels and decide. Is the same sort of thing happening here on a regular basis, or is it just allowed to tick along because we're a council and we don't want to take too much risk?
We review the annual strategy annually. So, it is reviewed annually, but we also review investments... kind of real time, so the investment list will be assessed as events occur. So our strategy is set annually, but our decision making is real time.
Have we exhausted the benefits, interests, and excitement of Treasury management? I think that's all. I think that's all you're getting for that one. In which case, page 225, 2.1, can we recommend to Council that they note the annual Treasury Management Report for 18-19, and two, approve the actual 2018-19 Prudential and Treasury indicators in this report. Oh, yeah, you can, yes.
It's unanimous, Chair.
Thank you. And now we have update on risk management, item 11, page 237. And this time, before you kick off, Anton, I must apologise to you and sort of open it a little more before you do your presentation. And that is, I had not had the time to go through this until yesterday. I've added a whole load of comments today, which would have been totally unfair on Anton to have dumped him and said, why don't you consider this, why don't you consider that? And his response was this afternoon, which I thought was brilliant, this is a working document, and therefore comments can come in at any time. So now that you've got it all in front of you, if any one of you is in the guilty position that I am, at not having done it a couple of days ago, and brought it, or only brought it tonight, etc., don't hesitate to bring it the end of the week, next week, whatever, so that this document can be polished and brought up to date, because our risk management, according to the internal auditors and anybody else with half awake, as it were, I'm not saying they're half awake, quite bluntly was nowhere near where it should have been. and it's not going to get to be a perfect position tonight or next week, but we're moving a long way away from where we were. Thank you, Anton.
Okay, yeah, and I would just reiterate that again. Seriously, welcome input from members into the identification of risks. So this is a risk document which isn't just for senior officers, it's also members. So it is a live document, it is a developing document. Unfortunately, that means it's getting bigger and bigger as time goes on. You'll see we've changed the format because, frankly, it was becoming unreadable. There are only so many ways you can do a risk register, so all the same kind of things are in there, but hopefully it's a bit more readable. So the risk register is Appendix 1. Please do feedback comments. You'll see that what you should see through time is that middle section, things that we're actually doing. There are more of those. And the final section, which is in short, and things that we still need to do, should start to ease off. As I said before, some of these risks will never be 100% green. We will still always have them, but we need mitigating factors in as much as we can. So that's the risk register. We've not updated any significant. This is the corporate risk register. So we've not added any additional risks, but actually some of those risks expand over time. We do, beneath this, now have draft service risk register, draft service risk registers, which we're going through, and those are being put down alongside service plans, and those will be in the same format too. And I think in the last meeting, we identified and showed our actual strategy in terms of reporting and so on. More than happy to talk to members about that, particularly new members, in terms of how we approach risk and how we manage it. We are on a journey, as the chair says. And the appendix too, I think, is heartening, which shows our implementation plan. And if you looked at this 6, 8, 10 months ago, it was all red with maybe the occasional amber. It's mostly green now, and that's genuine and legitimate. There are still some ambers on there. Actually, the ambers are really around how we report risk. At the moment, risk is on our Pentana performance management system. Or it partially is, but we've done these risk registers outside that. So we just need to consider that and what is the way in which officers and members can have access to that. So that's the kind of work that's still going on alongside the service risk register. So sorry, again, a bit of a lengthy introduction, but please feel free to email me with suggestions, additions, and so on. Okay, thank you.
John.
Could you have an explanation of the acronym SMART that you're using there?
Oh, gosh, it's a test me now. It's measurable, achievable.
Don't help him with his homework.
Sorry, sir.
Suspicious. It's specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. Time-related, yeah. Yeah.
Did you say terminated or
yeah, suspicious.
Yeah. Anybody else got any questions that Anton won't know the answer to? I don't often get the chance to get one up on Anton, and there's a nice glowing one brought along and wrapped. Thank you. Well,
it is a comment more than a question, if I may.
Either comments, questions, or not.
I mean, this is an enormous step in the right direction. Yeah. And that is, I mean, not just clear by what we've seen in front of us on the pieces of paper. And thank you for that, Anton. It really is a huge step forward. A couple of observations. I wonder, and as ever, it's just a question, whether or not members may have helped more in this process than they possibly have, and whether this is something we may have sort of put a call of action out to members to say, come on guys, this is something that really is important and we really would welcome your input, and that's maybe just a suggestion for the future. And the second thing is it has been an enormous piece of work, and I actually, it would be nice at some stage, not now, it would be nice at some stage just to understand how much of the officers across the council's resource has had to go into sorting this out. And I think that's what it is sorting it out. And that's just, you know, something I personally would be interested in the sense of just what impact this has had on available resource.
That's nice. That's a good question, actually. I think perhaps when we bring the next update, we can do that. We can certainly try and analyse how much time we spent and resource on doing this.
If I may, I just think it's a sort of thing that it would be good for members to understand just the impact this has had.
I'm very impressed with this piece of work, and it was kicked off by Jeff Aikam at the committee I couldn't make last year, which was good, because it may wouldn't have been half as good if I'd been there. And on that point, though, your point about members being more involved, we certainly can't in the next few months, but I think there is a case for us either setting a working party evening aside so that we could have a, if you like, a whiteboard and ideas session as to what could be added and what couldn't, may well be worth doing before or after a meeting. But with the agenda you've seen tonight, I was in a way, that's why we didn't get to my half dozen suggestions to go into this tonight, this afternoon, and to do it tonight as well on top of would just be unreasonable. So, yes, I think it's brilliant. And we're building, but I think there could be, Will, you're absolutely right, bringing more member input to it. Anybody else, any comments to add to this? Oh, you wish to stay for this? What are your comments? What would you like to add to it? See, if you can ask a question he can't answer, I'm pleased with that.
I mean, I think from our perspective, clearly, you know, one of the issues that led to our qualified VFM conclusion was the lack of risk management arrangements in place last year and the early part of 18-19.
Yeah.
So clearly this is a real positive step in the right direction. I know that the Chief Exec and Anton and others in the senior management team have you know, spent an awful lot of time, you know, getting to this stage. I think it's an area where clearly it's going to be a key area that we look at as part of our 19-20 audit, and we've said to Anton we're very keen to work with Anton around sort of putting in some of our input that we see elsewhere in the local government sector, and particularly in the NHS sector, where the sort of risk registers assurance frameworks are really embedded in that particular sector. So Talina and I see quite a lot of these, and there'll be things that we can, you know, feed into Anton and Stacey and colleagues as part of our 19-20 planning. So, you know, clearly a positive step forward for us, Chair, given that we've raised it as a big issue for this year. And, you know, we're keen to work with senior management team as part of 19-20.
This is the trouble with meetings like this. When you get people showing you good ideas, they just create more, which is why I think the working party might be an idea. The NHS is not the best in terms of risk management. The NHS has got a reputation and does some covering up. The industry that it might be, and I don't know whether you will have connections somewhere into it, the aircraft industry, everybody runs when they did something wrong, or something wasn't right, they run to report it because they get brownie points for reporting a mistake that they've done. So I dozed off when I was taking off from Singapore Airport. They report this. Half a dozen pilots report this out of the 600 that have done it, and they go, why is this happening for this airport?
Mm.
And they look at it. Is it the temperature in the pilot's area? Is it this? Is it that? Is it the other? Rather than every pilot going, yeah, I did that, but I don't tell anybody, which tends to be other areas. And to some extent, when we've seen the things that have come out, some of the NHS, and the NHS is desperately trying to move itself in risk management to the aircraft things, and that might be worth having a look at.
Yeah, I mean, I think from our perspective, the key thing with the sort of risk register is that they are, as Anton's mentioned, you know, it's a live, living document where things are added to it or taken off if things are dealt with, and that, you know, relevant members of the authority, you know, get that opportunity to feed into that process, so that it's not just done quarterly and forgotten about. It's got to be embedded in the overall governance of the council, and clearly that wasn't happening before, and this is a real good step forward from where things were. So I think, and the other thing to keep thinking about, I think, you know, what are the key things that are keeping the senior management team awake at night, or members awake at night, and are they mapped across to this document? Because if they're not, then there's a question mark that, you know, are these the right risk for Rydale Council? Question mark. And if they're not the things that are on members' radar or senior management, then there's a mismatch there. So I think that's something that always needs to be at the forefront of senior officers and members' minds when reviewing this document, to make sure it is, you know, a living, breathing document of the key issues facing the council and the mitigations and actions that are being put in place to reduce those risks. But there'll be certain risks, as Anton said, that can never be fully eliminated, and the council will just have to, you know, sort of live with.
Thank you, everybody who's contributed to that, and to those of you who contribute into what's coming, please do. And I will just take you back, and I can't remember when it was, Di or Jim, but it's some time back in history, and we had a member risk champion, and nobody wanted to do it. So the decision of council was to abolish the post, and it enabled me to say, which wasn't exactly smart, well, we'll just take the risk then. So we didn't have a risk champion, and we're moving away from that a long way. But if you could just have a look and see if you can find out how the aircraft industry runs its risk approach, because that might tell us not the mechanics of, but how they get there. I don't know who would find out. But
I will do my
good
best, Chair. We'll have to take that one away, I think, Chair. I'm not at this moment in time entirely sure of who in GT has got good connections into the airline industry, but I will ask the question, Chair.
There may be a test match in Sri Lanka or somewhere else that it would be worth. A site visit, yes. Lovely.
Yeah.
Thank you all ever so much, and thank you, Anthony.
Thank you, Chair.
Very much indeed. It's brilliant move. It's a brilliant step forward. Right, what do we do with the risk register? Can somebody tell me where we've got to? It's recommended that the committee notes the contents of the report and comments on the format and details of the corporate risk register. And I would put to adding to that at the end, and members commit to, and that doesn't mean any one individual, but members commit to contribute to it as soon as possible, just so that when we look at the minutes and everything else down the track, we go, oh, whoops, I was going to do that. Lovely. There will be a vote on it.
It's unanimous, Chair.
Thank you, Will. Can I now propose a 10-minute adjournment on the basis that I'm gently going to sleep and other people are popping out for comfort breaks, and we can all do it now. Thank you both ever so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
John, the next item is the leisure report. Do you want the two guys from Active Committees up here?
Yeah.
I'll just let them know.
Yeah, no.
refresh that so that it's red?
Yep.
Right, thank you for that. I think I was gently beginning to drift off. I will never know when we have guests where you start other by saying good evening, but the system is that you have go to the officer's report. So good evening both, but I'll let Joss introduce her report. Thank you, Joss.
Thank you. The report is our fairly standard covering report, so just highlighting a few things from the annual report. So for the benefit of the newer members, Everyone Active are our leisure provider operating the facilities at Derwent Swimming Pool in Norton, the Rydell Swimming Pool and Fitness Centre, sorry, it's the Derwent Swimming Pool and Fitness Centre in Norton, the Rydell Pool and Fitness Centre, which is in Pickering, and the Northern Rydell Leisure Centre, which I think is marketed as the Rydell Sports Centre, isn't it? And that's the joint use facility that we own with jointly with Lady Lumley School. So this report covers the fifth year of the contract, which is 10.5 years long. For the benefit of the new members, Everyone Active come every year and give us a report and are happy to answer questions on any of the members might have an interest in. Thank you. So we have here Martin Miles and John Bird.
Good evening both. Welcome back again. And it hardly seems a year since you were here. It isn't. I would love you to continue. And present your report.
Okay, good evening. Martin Miles, I'm the area manager for Everyone Active, and John Bird is the general manager. He's been in post here in Rydale for about 7 or 8 months. For previous members, I remember we had Kevin Murray before that, but John's doing an excellent job for us here in Rydale. And just probably just to add for new members as well, we're happy to take questions as we go through this report. If you want to shout out in the middle of a slide, or if you want to save your questions to the end, we're happy either way. And also, if anyone wants a tour of the facilities, whether that's sort of new members or old members, then we can arrange that at your convenience, and we're more than happy to show you around all three facilities at any time you want as well. We've got the annual report, which I think you've probably may. I'm not sure some of you have got the annual report in front of you. What we suggest we'll do, we'll take you through the key sections of that report and we'll get going. So the first section we're going to have a look at starts for you on our report is page five. And John's going to take you through refurbishments, maintenance and environmental management.
So just a small overview in relation to the site improvements and maintenance we've been doing. All three centres have had some form of significant work carried out in the last 12 months of 18-19. Derwent has had a full sauna refurbishment, which is going to allow us to continue to run that facility for the remaining 5 years. The centre had a full repaint to bring it up to date and bring it back to our brand standards. And we installed some accessible equipment in the gym to allow those with accessibility needs to be able to fully participate. Similar sort of thing at Rydale Swim and Fitness Centre. We had electrical rewiring to bring it up to date, as well as a full decoration of our reception area and in the gym. We've also had some work carried out to the plant room to make sure that continues working for a number of years too. And then in terms of Rydale Sports Centre, we've upgraded the IT assets there, and the majority of the work in relation to Rydale Sports Centre has fallen into this current financial year. It's quite impressive. We've got an upgrade of the gym, and we're looking at working with the school to introduce virtual classes so we can increase that. But obviously that didn't quite take effect in the last financial year. And then in terms of the environmental, we have a number of initiatives across the centres to help reduce our CO2. Everyone Active as a company has retained its IOS 14001 accreditation, and our centres specifically are just increasing our awareness of recycling. So we've introduced new recycle bins in the centres. We're trying to reduce the amount of plastics we use from our sustainable providers, and just having that as a part of our conscious mind as we're working day to day. And then moving on to page seven, is Martin's going to take us through attendance.
Got any questions at this minute on maintenance? No. Attendance figures then for the three facilities. We had a 1% increase in attendance. We've got an additional 2,344 attendances last year, which was good. And we've managed to increase attendances across all three facilities. If you look at the split of the facilities, Rydale Sports Centre being the dual-use facility at Lady Lumley School had the least increase in attendance, although that's the focus for this year. And as John has said, you'll see that reflected in next year's reports. We've done quite a bit of work with Stuart Clary up there as well on the facilities. So hopefully that will be reflected in next year. We have obviously done well on attendances at Rydale and Derwent, but just looking at the split there, due to the nature of the facilities for new members, even though Pickering's got a smaller population than Moulton and Norton, it's by far the busiest facility just due to the nature of the fact it's got a better layout in there. It's got a bigger gym facility, and it's got least competition, I suppose. Moulton has also got the Moulton Sports Centre as well, which is great for the town. Doesn't help us because it's competition. But we're pleased with attendances. They did, if members remember, take a dip last year, so we're back up to the previous year's attendance figures. I think that slide only shows you the last 2 years, but the attendance report that we've got in your pack on page seven shows we're back above the April 16-17 figures. Any further questions on attendances? No? Okay, we will move to our next slide, which is... Oh, yes.
If I may, Chairman. The numbers coming through is critical and crucial to most businesses. The numbers are not exactly the same as last year. What measures are you taking to address that? Is it expected that the numbers fluctuate the way that they have? And have you any underlying cause that you can think of that may be behind the numbers being different as from last year to this?
I think these figures show we're about 1% up on last year. So we haven't got any particular concerns about attendance. Absolutely, numbers through the door is part of it. What people are paying is another part of the business mix, isn't it, as well, pricing. I don't think we've got any particular concerns. I think over the last 3 or 4 years since the development work, even though tenancies have fluctuated slightly, the business has remained fairly flat. So competition obviously is increasing in the fitness market generally. Swimming lessons is maybe got some competition as well, but we are working very hard with marketing and colleagues and sales colleagues across the contract to make sure we continue to drive the business forward. So I wouldn't say there's any underlying concerns.
Yeah. Well,
clearly this is attendances, so there is no, or is there any breakdown of is that, you know, is 10 attendances one person coming 10 times or 10 people coming one time? What is it, how do we actually differentiate between the not just the number of passengers through the door, but actually the number of people in Rydale who are taking opportunity to use the facilities?
I can give you any breakdown of attendances you like, so you're quite right. That is just the physical number of uses of the facility. So, yes, it could be one person coming 104,000 times. So it's not individual unique uses. Absolutely, it will be. But we've got all the data behind it, so we've got a very robust software system behind it, so we can break down anonymised data for whatever the council wants to see. And for some authorities, we give bespoke reports depending on what information they want. So it's not helpful when I can say I can provide any information, but I can. If you want it broken down individuals, how many individuals have used it over the year and their frequency, I can break that down if that's something you want. And we can work with officers to deal with any questions outside this and what attendances you want.
I'm personally, I'm interested in, given the push towards increased fitness and getting, at the end of the day, we're not impacting on 55,000 people in Rydale if it's the same 10,000 people using it all and nobody else is. So I'm not looking for a massive exercise. It would just be nice to have some reassurance that the actual numbers of people using it is improving.
Absolutely, and we can probably do it the reverse way. We can look at non-users, so we could map areas of maybe Pickering, Norton and Moulton, or it might be some of the smaller villages out within the district that are not using it. So we could do that way. We could say, where are the pockets in this district that are not accessing those leisure facilities, so to encourage them to then come and use it. So there's a number of different ways we could map that for you.
So, I mean, if we were to sort of come back through the officers in terms of just something that would be fine. Thank you.
Yeah, more than happy to work with Joss, and we could provide you some reports that we do for some other authorities about non-users, and we could also map for you where current users are coming from and the frequency.
Moving on to just some of our developments. It'll directly impact what you just said. So we've introduced some new programmes over the last 7 months, which are going to build some momentum and definitely grow this next year. We've worked in partnership with the officers, and we've developed a care leavers programme. So anyone leaving care from Rydale District Council or Scarborough Borough Council is entitled to a free annual membership with ourselves, and that gives them access to all of the leisure centres within Rydale and Scarborough. And they just have to be referred through their social worker. At the point of this report being written, we did have 4 people who had taken up that option already, which is an incredible number considering Scarborough's also only on 7. So that's definitely in the early stages of developing a bit of traction. We've had our sporting champions again. We've just closed our 2019-2020 applications. Last year we had under 14 hammer thrower from Moulton, who was successful in getting £500 sponsorship from our Sporting Champions programme. And we also had another 13 people who were awarded free use of our facilities or free memberships to help aid their sporting campaigns over the year. So that's really good that we're getting people from the local area and helping build that talent. One of the third big things we've just launched in March was a GP referral scheme. So doctor surgeries, any medical professionals can signpost through our dedicated GP referral instructor. It's a 12-week scheme that allows people to have supported access back into leisure or back into some form of physical activity. And that is directly supported by an escape pain programme which is run nationally, and we are the primary delivery partner for North Yorkshire Sport on that programme. We're just entering cohort 3, and we've seen over 112 people across North Yorkshire on that. We have a scheme in Kirby Moorside, and we're about to launch a second scheme in Pickering, which is specific to the Rydale catchment. And then in relation to swimming, we've introduced swim scheme exit routes. So we've introduced rookie lifeguarding and junior fitness. So where we would normally lose children who don't want to go to the swim clubs at stage 6 and 7, we've developed schemes for them to stay in the ability to enjoy swimming through rookies. It's just a way of keeping people doing something every week and help build that passion for physical fitness or actually just being off their computers, which is great. And then the big one at the bottom was colleague development and training. We've really invested in the last 7 months in our colleagues. We've upskilled all of our gym staff to be qualified personal trainers to help map the market development. We've put a lot of our middle management team through our own in-house emerging managers programme, which has also then allowed us to see a lot of development to bigger centres such as Scarborough. So we've seen a lot of our colleagues develop themselves. Obviously, myself, I came across from Whitby as part of my career development too, so we're really driving our colleagues from top to bottom to ensure that we're getting the best we possibly can. Has anyone got any questions in relation to any of that?
Doesn't look like it. Keep going.
Health and safety. We report on accidents per 10,000 visits, so that therefore can be benchmarked against other similar leisure facilities. Our company target is to have less than 5 accidents per 10,000 visits, which I think is across the leisure industry a standard benchmark that we aim for. We've done a lot of work over the last 12 months in accident reduction, and as you can see from 17-18 to 18-19, we have reduced accidents per 10,000 visits across all three facilities. So Rydale Sports Centre has gone down from 9.6 to 6.6, Rydale Swim and Fitness 2.3 to 2, and Derwent 1.9 accident per 10,000 visits to 1.8. So before you ask the question, why is Rydale Sports Centre so high?
Yeah.
Nature of activity, we do roller skating. If we want to bring that down, we could just scrap roller skating. Which I think will be the wrong thing to do. So clearly there's risk assessments in place for roller skating and needs to be managed, but as I know from managing facilities, the higher the risk activity, the higher the accidents. I would say that actually that Rydale Pool and Derwent Pool, because they are swimming pools and therefore unfortunately things are slippy, those accident rates are exceptionally low. So I think that's a real positive. And then the additional bit of information we provide is on this side, that's our internal health and safety auditing process. As you can see, we're at 99%, 96% and 97.2%. So within our internal auditing, we're scoring exceptionally well on our health and safety audits. Slight dip there at Rydale Sports Centre, that's been due to change of staff, but we've still scored 97.2% on our health and safety audit. Clearly, there's additional audits as well. So we've recently had a Quest visit to Rydale Pool, so they audit as the external organisation that benchmarks leisure facilities. So we do get health and safety audits as well from external sources. Any questions on? If you're into health and safety, this is really exciting. But if you're not,
I'm just looking at Appendix 3 on the accident analysis, and I'd just like to ask you to define exactly what natural causes are in column 3 under accidents. Thank you.
Okay. hit by a Pickford's truck.
Have a look.
So, natural causes is things which we don't impact, such as nosebleeds, where we've provided first aid, but it's not as a direct result of an activity they're participating in.
Right, okay, that's fine, thank you.
We get to move on to my favourite topic now, which is customer feedback. We've had a large amount of customer feedback come through in the last 12 months, and there's a small breakdown in the appendix for you. We've also put a little bit in the report in regards to just some positive comments and some negative comments. And then from the response we had from the officer, we have added an extra section this year to say what we've done to some of the key comments that were negative. But just to give you a flavour of what we've had a lot of positivity around the sauna and group exercise classes. Group exercise is obviously one of our main retention tools, so it's great to see that we're getting positivity from that. And we recently launched a club development plan, which started late March, early April. And we had some really positive feedback. We've managed to engage with some clubs we wouldn't normally engage with. We've been able to not necessarily signpost them to the facilities, but we've definitely been able to support them or signpost towards funding partners like North Yorkshire Sport and just provide a bit of advice from our expertise. And then in relation to negative comments, we've had a few come through regarding swimming lessons and inconsistency of staffing, cleanliness and maintenance, which is always irregular, and in relation to the pool timetabling and availability of the programmes. All have been addressed and dealt with. It's just obviously the nature of the amount of visits we're getting. We do get to see some negativity. Does anyone have any questions in relation to customer comments?
Again, I'm just looking at 6.3, and your report states that many of the customers will only make comments or contact us with negative feedback. And then I'm looking on page 32 at the appendix, and there's 273 comments there from the Pickering facility. And I was just wondering what proportion of them would be positive comments and what proportion would be negative comments, because that does seem like more or less a comment a day over the year. Thank you.
So our colleagues are all KPI'd to collect one piece of feedback, be it positive or negative, per day, so that's why we aim for such high figures. In relation to if they're positive or negative, we recently, when we switched to our new provider of single customer view, we removed the ability for people to score us 1 to 5. That was a decision made at a higher level in relation to we just wanted to know their feedback. A lot of people didn't rank us. People can do it through the phone and the app now, feedback-wise, and it doesn't always give us a clear example of if it's positive or negative. The positive comments, we've only recently started logging correctly, so you'd get a lot at reception to our front-of-house colleagues or to our group exercise, which would be verbally recognised but never recorded properly. So that's something we've definitely taken a focus on this year, to try and make sure we collect the positive as well as the negative.
I think we can provide some additional breakdown. It's all there, as in we can read through and go, that's either positive or negative.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to know if you can obviously monitor and pick out what percentage are positive and what are negative, then it would be great to have those figures. Thank you.
Yeah, that's not a problem. I think the philosophy that John has got and the company is that we need to record every single comment, whether positive or negative, but we could do some further breakdown to say out of those 273, 60% were negative, 40% were positive. I think that's what you're asking for, isn't it?
Yes, please. Thank you.
No problem.
Yeah, I think you're probably giving yourself a worse picture here than it is, because if you haven't always collected positive and negative comments, and it looks as though they've gone up suddenly, that could be more than. In other words, the negative comments may have gone down, but the total number of comments have gone up.
Absolutely. Until we look at the numbers, I'm not sure. I would say the most important bit is to deal with each comment on its merit and therefore resolve that.
But so not in analysis at the end of the year. If your complaints are complaints, this is too wet, that's too dry, this is too hot, too cold, if they are going down and you market the fact that your number of comments are going up and you don't put in the cut-off point from t'other to which, you're really making it look massively worse than it may be. But yes, the figures would be nice, and if you could send them to Josh and then Josh can circulate them around the whole committee, that would be brilliant.
Yep. No problem.
Thanks. Well,
just on the same issue, I mean, you obviously run other facilities as well as the ones here. It would be useful, I would find it useful, to have some comparison in terms of where these sit against, if you like, everything that you do. Yeah? Do these facilities sit in the middle? Do they sit at the top end? Do they sit at the bottom end? How do they stack up against other similar? So, and again, I'm not looking for a 72-page report, just a sense of we've done a snapshot of a dozen whatever, and this is how Rydale, sort of the Rydale facilities compare with them. If it's in here and I've missed it, I apologise.
It's not in there, but we can do that.
Me again. Just an overview of what we're going to be doing for 2019, 2020 and a little bit further on as well. We are launching the Rydale District Sports Awards, which will take place in February. That is the last event in our 12-month club development strategy. It's our chance to show our sporting champions of Rydale catchment area, award them, provide them with some publicity and generally make an icon of what sport can do within the borough, within the district. We currently have the event planned, and we've got corporate sponsorship, which is great. And nominations will open from the 1st of September. So that's a real big headline event for us this year. In addition to that, we're massively developing the GP referral scheme with Escape Pain, and that's a real big priority for Sports England, is helping try and get those who are restricted from leisure facilities, getting them in. We have seen that those who have come through our GP referral scheme so far have all stayed, so we're looking at how we can break down those barriers further. We have employed an activity manager who's based at Rydale Sports Centre, which will be supporting the club development strategy. His role is to work with clubs. Initially it was the clubs that we already engaged with, but he's now starting to work more alongside North Yorkshire Sport to meet those who we don't, to see how we can support, facilitate or work more as a larger area to support sport and fitness. And then Rydale Sports Centre, we are looking to just grow in general. We've launched holiday activity camps. The AstroTurf is a fantastic facility which we really need to get a lot more attendance onto as well. So they're our priorities for the next 12 months.
That's it, Chair.
Oh, question.
Thank you.
Specifically on the AstroTurf, again, if it's in here and I've missed it, I do apologise. Percentage usage, do we sort of calculate separately the amount of usage? I mean, that's a huge facility. It's a very unique facility in the area. I pass it quite a lot. I don't see it being used as much as I would like to see it being used. Am I just going past at the wrong times of day, or is it something that we really do need to push and develop?
I think it needs pushing and development. I think it's a great facility. We have to be mindful it's a sand-based pitch, and if you're playing football, you want to be on a 3G pitch that looks like artificial grass. So football on there is okay, but it's not probably what you would expect normally nowadays in 2019. And I think the number of clubs that we've got on there is limited, but it is a nice facility, but it's big for the town, and therefore how do we then get more people on that? Absolutely, and that's part of the focus of working with the school, with the clubs and the wider community to see how we can get people on there. Absolutely.
Jim?
Thank you for having researched this as carefully as I might, but if it's not late for football, what's the alternative? Because it seems to be football's by far and away the biggest market out there for you.
Football has to be part of the activity that we have on there, so people still will play it, but it's also it's the school's pitch, not ours, and therefore they play hockey on it. And therefore, we've got to balance that pitch with hockey and football, and that's part of the challenge. But yeah, I would say that, you know, it's a dual-use facility. Quite, you know, the school has a, you know, I don't speak for Stuart, but the school have got a strong hockey base, and therefore they want the ability for the students at Lady Lumley's to be able to play hockey on that pitch, and there is a hockey club on that pitch as well. And if you turn that into a football pitch, then I don't think that's a good news story either. So it's not perfect, but I think we can work with what we've got, and we need to work harder to get more people on it.
Just to support what Martin was saying, the AstroTurf pitch has just been recently replaced after it had been in there for about 10, 15 years, hadn't it? And we did have a long discussion about how to replace that. Should it be replaced with a flat hockey-based pitch, or should we try and get in a 3G pitch? And I think it's fair to say that from a finance point of view and from an income-generating point of view, everyone active would have rather we'd put in the 3G pitch because the football market is much bigger. But from a playing pitch strategy point of view, we worked with the school and also looked at the sort of the availability of pitches across this area. And of course, there is a 3G pitch which this council had also supported at Moulton Sports Centre. So the 3G pitch with the sort of the fake turf, we already had one of those in Moulton, and had we taken out the hockey pitch and replaced it with another 3G pitch, then the hockey players would have had nowhere to play. So we decided to work with the school, keep the hockey pitch, and now we've got provision of both within 10 miles of each other.
Thank you, Josh.
Well, yeah, just my recollection of the time is I remember the debates, the discussions and all that went on, and it was a very fine balance. And I'm not seeking to say we made the wrong decision. We always knew that actually use of that pitch outside of the school using it was going to be an issue. And I think we took the decision consciously aware of that. It's probably a bit tougher than we even thought it was, and it really is something that we really got to try and do. I'm not suggesting you're not trying, but if there's anything that the council can do to help, then please do shout. It does need using more outside of the school usage.
Any more for any more? No, I think that's the end. Well, thank you both ever so much. And it's very, very useful having the report in a short distance of time after it's written, rather than looking at it as last time. Well, and not only was it then, but you had it all written and done, and we then spent another 3 or 4 months before we invited you and looked at it, which was a ludicrous timing, and this in itself is a lot better. October, November, somewhere there, yeah, exactly. So, unfortunately, we probably won't see you for another 12 months now, and the 7 months between the two, it did seem shorter than the year, as I said. But thank you ever so much. You know where we are. You're in regular contact with us. Thank you ever so much, and I think everybody's had a fair crack, and we've got answers to questions and so on. Lovely stuff. Thank you both very much indeed.
So what are you saying? We've no officers for any of them, then?
No, I'm not saying that, John. I'm saying I haven't got their names yet because they're both on leave.
Right. Both on leave. There's three there. Are you doing this one?
No, Ellie, but then the other two I haven't got their names.
So Ellie's doing climate change?
Yes.
And what's her qualifications in climate change?
She doesn't. She's not an expert in climate change.
I'm not having that.
So
I am not having that for that one. As I said to you a fortnight ago, those two are doable with whatever. That needs seniority. Right? That needs qualifications. and that needs the ability to work. So you know, that one's anybody. That one needs somebody with some clout, and that needs somebody with some knowledge and experience.
But Josh is also the only person we have who's dealing with the other two issues relating to climate change.
No.
And also, she's the commissioning officer, so it's difficult to find the time to release Josh to do those things when she's got to do this rather, John.
So how did she have the time last year then?
I'm just going to say these are
the questions, right? Mm-hmm. I want the answers in a week. And she'll end up going to Josh. I don't think you're gaining any resource. But anyway, we'll do it. I'm going to fix up dates, as I promised you, though, tonight.
Okay. Well, let me have a conversation with Josh about what her work...
Yeah, whatever. I thought you were doing this.
Well, I've been talking to Philip about it, but I also...
Philip knows nothing about climate change.
No, about what Joss's work. Let me talk to Joss about her workload.
Yeah, please.
And I will do that.
Please, because, you know, it's too big to know.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that's getting me up. Right, delivering the council plan. This is one of Will's little side issues, isn't it? Delivering the council plan, Will, have we got a page number for that? Is it? It's on the additional bit, isn't it? Yeah. Right. This is by a well-known Scottish author, Tony Galloway. Well, it says, you know, it's no good laughing. It says on here, author. Away you go. No, that is hurtful. This is in the non-fiction section.
It's a thriller.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, this is the latest quarterly report of the delivery of the council plan, looking at the key performance indicators and comparing them against an actual performance for the period up to the end of June 2019. Appendix 1 provides the details behind the performance indicators. Of the indicators that are reported on, we have one indicator which is has a status red and one indicator which has an amber status. Those two indicators, the additional information is provided on page... on the second page of the report. And the recommendation... Chair, is for members to note the report. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer those.
Any questions, comments, thoughts? I have a couple of questions for this, because this is an area I've been concerned over for a long time, like a week after I became chair of scrutiny, I came to the conclusion that our performance monitoring was not fit for purpose, and I'm still of that belief. The other half of the equation is that it has improved massively in those 2 years. I'm not sure what, and Will's knowledge of our decisions in the past might be far better than mine, what we have decided, but there's a lot of the performance indicators do not come to us or don't appear to come to us in the 12-month period. Now, if they are coming divided through, I'm sorry, I was going to get to you this afternoon, Will, but the pre-meeting lasted from 3 o'clock till 29 and a half minutes past 6, and as a result, I didn't have time to come and check with you. But the total number of indicators, there's a vast number of them, don't go anywhere near members, and they need to. But they don't want to do what they did 3 years ago, and that is where they were all coming to everybody, every meeting, and everybody was just going yes and agreed, and this wonderful phrase here that Tony's got down of noting them. Now, I don't mind us noting the 26 that haven't got any information with them, for example, but I think noting is a dangerous approach, and I may go with it at the end of the meeting. But as we've been asked to note them, and I asked this afternoon, why is the target on page 45 for food establishments in the area, and I would have thought it was right in the area, broadly compliant with food hygiene law? And that struck me as woolly on a good day. Broadly compliant. So you could be broadly compliant with the speed limit, but I don't think it'd get you very far. And on that basis, I think it's a little too woolly. Then I asked, why is the target 72%? Because we have consistently been moving along in the 80s for years, which is good. And the answer is that the Food Standards Agency believes it should be 72. Now, if the Food Standards Agency is happy with a standard of broadly compliant with, and more than a quarter of the establishments broadly not compliant with, and I have no clue what that means, I'm nervous about us sitting here and saying, we note it. No offence, author. But I think we need to get further into that, because when it goes wrong, and I once lived in a flat above where the typhoid outbreak happened in Aberdeen, and was in there a year or two after it, and all the businesses in that area were blighted for years. And I don't want us as members to be involved if anywhere near, well, it was broadly compliant and it got a tick from us last year. Is this a high enough standard? And if the Food Standards Agency isn't doing it a high enough standard, then we should. But I don't know. I don't know enough about it to know whether 72% actually means it's them in good and it's a very high standard, etc., or whether it says what the words say here. So I would ask that, provided the agenda allows, and this one hasn't, so I'm going to move on quickly, otherwise we're not going to be here finished today. I think we ask that the officers bring, and can we minute this, Will, a broader look at and a more in-depth look at the performance indicators for whichever of the two October meetings fits the workload best. And I'll leave that with them. I suspect it might be the second one, because we've got climate change coming in two forms to the first. And if I've got a seconder for that, I'm happy to move on and stop
I'll second that.
Dominating and whatever. But I just feel that we've got stuff we should be looking at here, and we need a more in-depth analysis of what it is, etc. Will.
Question, John. Does that mean that officers would have to do analysis that they don't currently do to provide information different than it's provided for the report in the current?
Now, I am suggesting that there is many of the performance indicators. like I didn't know until I asked, and I've just picked on the one here, I haven't looked at any others. Food Standards Agency, broadly compliant with, which is bordering on tosh, 72%. And I ask, where does that come from? And I'm told, I believe reliably, that's the Food Standards Agency's level. Well, that's fine, unless we're responsible for it, which we are. I'd like to know a bit more about it. Now, that said, there are targets. Oh, income target is last year's what we did, etc. So some of the targets, if we fail to get them, so we have a target of 85, we do 80, next year the target is 80. So the target moves up and down to fit in line with what we've done. Now, that needs looking at. And I just think that we ought to be made more aware. Now, I will quite happily say, OK, fine, there's 100 of them. We'll look at 25 or whatever. I'm not going to suggest, and officers can discuss with me whether or not we, how many we bring and what we do. But it's been going on for 2 years as this, and it needs a bit more of a push to get it sorted. And, you know, if Tony and Stacey say, look, John, we can't do this, we could do that or whatever, then we'll look at what we can do and what we can't do. But I am saying it's drifted for 2 years, and that's getting near to too long. And this is where we picked up one of the places we picked up the climate change thing from. That the greenhouse gases haven't been measured for 2 or 3 years, and then we found we haven't looked at our climate change policy for 10 years, and then etc., and then all the rest followed on from it.
Can I ask my question a different way then?
Yeah, sorry, well, right, I thought I'd answer.
No,
yeah,
are we collecting? Are we in the process of collecting that much data, a glass full of data, and only reporting on this much of it?
I don't know accurately. But I believe so.
Right. So in actual fact, what we're getting is a picture of some of what we're already collecting, and therefore we could get just as the same detail on other stuff that we're already collecting.
Or we're not getting an accurate picture on some of the detail because the figures aren't there. We're not getting many of the ones. There's a wodge in there that says, and I've got some of them here. There's a wodge in there, and I've only just got them. The wodge in there saying, we don't measure this, or this hasn't been measured since, or awaiting government figures, etc. Now, all I'm saying is we need to bring that into the committee. Now, Will and I have been discussing it for long enough, and it just needs a more detailed look at, please, officers, is what I'm saying. And they will come back and say, we can't this, or we can't that, or we will this, or we won't that, whatever. And then when we've got that, we can decide whether we want to take it further, don't take it further, whatever, is my proposal. You know, we've got in here 3 or 4 new PIs. I have no idea why we've got those, or whether we need them or we don't. And this committee is the scrutiny committee, ought to be knowing, as some clue. Jim, are you waving? Sorry, the light in here is strange.
What you just said, Chair, about new PIs, that does concern me slightly, because obviously monitoring the council plan needs to be done in a way that you understand what you're looking at. But my sort of question and my hesitation at what you say is that I just wonder what's the correlation between our performance indicators and our risk management, because we seem to be doing rather the same thing there, to be honest. And, you know, how do they relate to each other, and how should they relate to each other? Because otherwise we're just doing...
That is what I'm saying. Broader than just looking at them and saying, are they accurate or not? Do we need them, etc.? Now, some of those won't be able to be done until we've drawn up our new corporate plan. I accept that. But how many affordable houses we've built, and what the greenhouse gas emissions are facts that we'll need almost irrespective of whatever our council plan is, because those are the sort of areas where I'd be staggered if we say we're not going to build any more houses. I'd be staggered if we say we're going to ignore our own climate change policy. So there will be a number of them that we can build on. There'll be others that we'll be going, don't know, so we don't have to look at those now. Sorry, have you got the microphone? I'll give you a call.
Should we not be addressing those issues through risk management if we're failing in our council plan delivery?
We are a scrutiny committee, and if management hasn't done it in 2 years, I'm suggesting that we look at what management has and what management hasn't done. I wasn't going to put it quite as bluntly as that, but we can if we like. If we'd left it, Jim, I'm sorry. Well, sorry if I have missed it. Try again.
What I'm saying is that if these performance indicators that we're missing, they should go onto the risk register and they should be resolved so that we're not missing them, as opposed to doing a whole new piece of work as to...
I don't mind. I don't mind at all. If you want to amend it, that all these goes onto the risk register and you bring it all back to the October meeting, that's fine. I don't mind where it goes or how it's done.
But it would seem that would be a better way to resolve it than having a whole new sort of investigation into the performance indicators. But we do need to know what we're trying to deliver before we can do that. And if indicators are changing, that is a concern.
What's anybody else's thoughts on that? Yes, in officers, result of comment as well, please. Yes, Tony.
Chair, what I would say is that the suite of performance indicators that are provided here are a mixture of statutory requirements in terms of performance indicators, and those ones are less able to be changed. But also there are ones which the council itself can set as key performance indicators, and as the chair has already indicated, those can change. My advice would be that we try and identify what are key indicators for the council that provides us with useful information, and that those become our key indicators. I do agree with the chair that we do need to look at the performance indicators to make sure that they are the right performance indicators for the council, and that it's the right information that's recorded.
Can I add to that, to the statutory ones, if the 72% on the food, broadly in line with, is the statutory one, I would be staggered if the law says that we can't set a target in Ryedale of 85% plus. I'd be very staggered if we can't. Yeah, please, Tony.
Thanks, Chair. What I would say to those ones where you've asked us, such as the food standards one, is we can look at the information behind the indicator. So, because clearly all this gives you is just the headline statement, but we can actually find out for you what the information is that sits behind that, and perhaps bring that back to give you a better idea of why the figure of 72 has been arrived at, what it actually means, and provide you with that.
This is what I'm suggesting, and if a 72% is what I've been told, which may or might not be accurate, is a straightforward Food Standards Agency and the law line, then I'd need to have a very good reason from somewhere why we can't have a target of 85%. And yes, you need to bring some in numbers to say why we can't, and then I'll be going, why have we done an average of 84% over the last 5 years? So it's not a criticism of where we are, it's a question of nailing it, because if it drops from the current 84s and whatever down to 73, system we've got won't highlight it. Anyway, what are we wanting to do? Die.
Actually, I think Tony's partly answered what I was going to say, because I was going to ask that about whether there is flexibility for us to change those targets. But also, what I wouldn't want us to do is to create a huge piece of work looking at new targets.
I'm not suggesting that.
And maybe take our eye off the ball in terms of actually focusing on the ones that need to be addressed, the ones that are flagged red and amber, because those are obviously the ones that we need to be building on, which is, I think, is partly what Councillor Bailey was saying. So, thank you.
I would be very happy with that if somebody somewhere had made a note that we had not, our targets for incomes were up the pole, for years. Our targets for greenhouse gases were up the pole for years, and these were numbers that we were getting quarter after quarter. And that's, I'm not suggesting for a second we create any more indicators. We may need, and we've got three or four here, and I'm going, whoa, we haven't got control of the ones we've got. Now, if these are statutory ones, as Tony's saying, that's fine, we have no choice. But I think we should look at it, and if we don't look at it, I'm quite happy the officers do it through the risk register, that's fine, as long as it's here in October saying this is what they're all about and this is why we haven't.
I'm much clearer. Thank you, John, for that. I, some of my concerns have gone away. I think it is important, though, to pick up what Councillor Bailey, as I would call him at a meeting other than over scrutiny, probably Jim, has said at this meeting. Go back to what Gareth said when he was talking about the need to make the risk register link into everything. So I think there is this need, and it will take 2 or 3 years to ensure that the mapping between the risk register, the KPIs and the corporate plan actually does that. So I think in all these discussions we've got to keep taking these three things back to each other.
Yeah, no problem with that.
Sure.
No problem with that.
But thank you. The conversation has eased some of my concerns. Thank you.
I'm quite happy. I think my motion still stands, which I'll ask Will to read out again. But all you two are discussing is the route it gets here. And as long as it gets here to scrutiny in October, we are now into the third year of not having had this. And that's, you know, the flexibility is going to go. It's not as bad as we've abolished the risk champion because we've got to take the risk. But we need to get over some of them. Any more for any more? Did you read it out? It seems a lifetime ago.
It was around coming back to one of the meetings in October with some of the more detailed work over how the targets have been arrived at.
Targets and can I amend that to targets and which KPIs come back to us? Because I'm not sure that we've had them all back. That doesn't mean we haven't. I don't know. Anybody want to move any amendments to change that? Because that doesn't actually say which route you do, and I'm quite happy if the officers want to do it through the risk register. I don't mind how it's done, as long as it's done. Everybody happy with it as it is? Because let's thrash it out. Right, can we take a vote on it then, please? Yeah, that's Will to read it out. Can you read it out again, please, Will?
It was to come back to one of the meetings in October with some more information on the KPIs and how the targets have been arrived at and the origin of them, where they've come from. That's unanimous.
Thank you. Can we have a little bit more light, please, Will? If possible. Did we move the noting as well? I thought we did. That was an amendment to the noting, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Don't lose out on your noting.
Thanks for that.
You all right? Right. Item 14, scrutiny topics. We have got four down here, and let me just go down them in general terms first. Economic development appears to be happening without scrutiny, having done anything whatsoever, I think it would be fair to say, when you look at the annual governance statement and or whatever. So I sort of put that up in the air. Equalities is a legal requirement, and we've done nothing on it for 10 years. It just sat there. And to my knowledge, there haven't been any... there might have been one or two equalities assessments in the last 5 years. And we had a policy that was made up 10 years ago and sat there for a couple of years and was taken notice of, and then it just drifted down. So we've got ourselves in a position in the last 5 years where apparently nothing has happened. Universal credit is a wonderful mess of chaos impacting on this council, the public, and last week DWP losing millions all over the country and saying, oh dear me, we seem to have got the security of this wrong. So we need to find out more how it affects the citizens of Rydal. Mental health provision for young people in Rydal. I can't remember whether it was in the meeting or after the meeting, but we took this on with enthusiasm, and then people were suggesting, why is that not going to North Yorkshire? So I raised it at the North Yorkshire Scrutiny of Health Committee, and the chair and the officer in charge said, yes, we should be doing that. Yes, we will do that. And I then amended it because it fits in that health is not Rydal, health is Scarborough and Rydal. So I amended it to Scarborough and Rydal to look into young people's mental health in those that health area. And I suddenly found I'd got all the Scarborough members on that committee going, oh, what a superb idea, etc. So it looks as though it's going into their work plan, etc. They have asked me to ask you, will you feed in via our officers, via me, whatever else, direct to North Yorkshire's Scrutiny of Health Committee, anything on young people's mental health in Rydal, so that while they're gathering information and looking at people, etc., they'll have information and casework and stuff fed in from us. Now, starting at the bottom, working upwards, I think that's a better cure for here, for that problem. Initially, anyway, if they don't do it well enough, then we'll have a go.
Could I just ask what sort of timescales? Have they given you an idea of timescales? Because actually, I think this is quite an urgent issue at the moment. And so, have they given you an idea on timescales?
I don't know whether it's on the agenda for or for the work programme at, but they were putting it on the work programme there and then, and the next meeting is in September. I will chase, particularly if somebody reminds me, to check that it's on the agenda, even if it's only the initial scoping and or whatever. And it won't do any harm, Di, if you were to sort of nudge North Yorkshire with whatever information you've got, even if they haven't started. It might encourage them to do said. All right. John.
Who's the lead officer now?
Daniel Harry is the officer for Scrutiny of Health. So are we happy that that sends mental health provision in the right direction, or are you wanting to leave it on here, Di?
No, I'm happy that I think it probably is a good fit for there, but I'm just concerned about the timescales, that's all.
Yes, so am I.
To make sure it happens.
So am I. Everything is timescales. I wouldn't believe the previous item we've had on the agenda tonight that I would have been on that for over 2 years, and we haven't got there, but unfortunately is like that.
I think we're all aware of the speed that the county works on something, so I will be looking.
Yes, but I'm just saying it, much as I like taking side swipes at the county, as it were, we have done nothing on those PIs in terms of committee. I mean, the officers have done some work, obviously, but we have done nothing on it in 2 years. So we're all guilty of probably not moving fast enough. So we are left with how do you feel, Will, in relation to economic development? Or has that sort of moved on in your book?
Clearly things are happening in terms of recruiting people to work in that department. I'm still minded, I think, to think that it is something that somewhere in the committee structure of the council, there needs to be a little bit more closeness to that as it develops now from what is a standing start than maybe might otherwise be. Now, maybe that's not overview and scrutiny. It may be that it's simply the relationship between the officer and what they're developing and P&R. I just think it's vitally important that we as members have got that, you know, pretty much on our radar, because without it, we might as well close Rydale down.
I think you're right in your broad analysis, because this committee wanted to look into the scrutinising, all of these people from North Yorkshire that were turning up and giving us financial service, etc., and so on, right? And we were asking, officers and reserve were asking, can we have the information on that? And it was moving and changing so fast that the contracts for delivering human resources, delivering pay slips, delivering 151 services, etc., was all moving because we didn't know what was needed here, let alone what could be delivered from North Yorkshire, that we decided it wasn't the time. And I think the same thing's happening with economic development at the moment. If you look at the annual governance statement, not only are we filling posts that we've got, we're actually recruiting posts into posts that we haven't. We're creating posts in it. Now, I think we're at this point. But I think, Will, we ought to be saying, can you, very early new year, end of the year, without looking at the timetable, raise it to look at? Because if we do it now, my belief is we will end up with, what are you scrutinising? What we haven't done yet. What are you overviewing? What we're not doing? That's my concern. I've been down that road and got my fingers burnt, and I'm not sure it's the right thing to do it again.
You may well be right, Chair. It may be something that is better put on a list for next year when we've actually got something settled down and in operation.
Well, I'm
content with that.
Thank you, but I'm slightly more positive than that. I'm not actually saying next year, which starts next May. I'm saying next calendar year, yes. And if we're up to the armpits with what we've got here, then we'll just say delay it, and if we're not, slot it in. That leaves us with two, equalities and universal credit. But then we have a third one that has arrived with us that I don't think we have the same flexibility as choosing which ones we want to do and which we don't. And I personally don't want to have that flexibility, but it's there. And that's the climate change motion that's come from full council. So I think we have three there. And one, equalities is legal. The other one, universal credit, is one that somebody needs to do something about, and we haven't been, and everybody's for a year, 2 years, have been saying we must look into that, we must do something. And the third one of climate change is one that we need to get on with, to look at that motion and find out what we're doing with it. Now, that's the bad news, because I think three is one more than we can cope with at the same time. The good news is I'm pretty certain, from our experience last time, was when we get onto the DWP and start saying, how does this work? How does that work? Can you give us clarity? They will go, no. Monckton office will go, we can't answer that. That needs to be referred to our head office. And then we'll have a month or 6 weeks where we won't hear anything. And last time round they did that, and then they followed it up with, no, we're treating that as a freedom of information request, if my memory serves me right. And that will be 21 days before we start to look at it, etc. Now, if that happens this time round, we'll only be running two, and then the other one will be slotting in, etc. And I'm prepared to have a gamble with it, because I wouldn't like to take equalities which we have to do and have done nothing with for years, universal credit that we owe it to the vulnerable in Rydale, and climate change, which is an instruction from full council. So I actually feel we haven't any choices there, but we might have to abandon something if it becomes too much. How does that sit in the room as an approach? It's not ideal, but anybody got any ideas of how we can do it better than that? Di, please. Oh, good.
Yeah, I mean,
abandon ship.
my view is that we should be prioritising. And obviously the motions come from full council. On top of that, it's incredible. It's probably the biggest issue that we're all facing that we need to be looking into. The spirit of the motion, as I'm sure most people are aware, was to actually get Rydale working on this, seriously putting the environment right at the heart of everything we do. And I know the work has already been done by this committee is great, but the idea of this was to build on that. And, you know, we do face a climate change emergency. I think that's the priority. So I think we should be kicking that one off as quickly as possible. And that is not to dismiss the other two. I think they're also very important. But, as you say, I think there'll be quite a lot of work on the equalities that could possibly be done by officers of the council bringing that to us. And yes, the universal credit one is very important as well. It's affecting so many people. But why is that amusing, John?
I find it particularly amusing because you're going down the same list and saying the same words, but if you like, it's all important. They're all urgent. They're all important.
Well, I think the climate change one is the most important, and I think that should be our priority.
Let me argue against that just in principle, right? No, I'm quite happy to state it, right? The climate change one is massively underway. We have a plan that has been put into place. I'm not saying we don't do it. I want to start at the same time as the others. But there is work going on that at the same time. And you will see later in this meeting, I'm sorry about this, I have called in two things from PNR because they didn't look at the climate change angle at all. That is not acceptable to me. But until we start measuring something in carbon, it's no good having fancy policies if we haven't a clue what they mean. So that doesn't mean I'm at all opposed to it, but we do need to analyse what it means and how it works, etc. And listening to other councils, that's an interesting concept. I don't think, and I could be completely wrong, tell me if you think I am, we're going to speed up what Rydale's doing if it's not coping with what we've asked it to do last March when we had our motion on climate, saying that things had to be measured in climate change, and I'm seeing her there, and before I forget to thank Joss for the brilliant work she did helping us putting that together, right? If we aren't delivering that step, and I don't know whether it's a step or a big one or a little one towards the motion, if we're not delivering that yet, I fail to see how we're going to get 3 or 10 steps down the road if we don't do the first one first.
My response to that would be, if we were actually doing this and taking it serious in the first place, that wouldn't have happened, because what we're saying is if we were actually working as fully on this theme as you would like us to, we wouldn't be calling things in because they would always be considered in everything that the council does.
But that's under what we've got already.
The other thing that the motion's asking for is for further officer resource in order to push this work forward.
Yep.
And I think that's something that we could do through scrutiny and look at the value of having that, and also a committee to work on it, so that it wouldn't all fall to officers to be pulling this work together. So those are the other aspects of the motion that I think, you know, are worthwhile us doing something. You know, I think people aren't necessarily taking the issue seriously enough and the urgency of the issue. And that's why I'm saying it should be a priority for this committee to start that, to keep that work going. Yes, the existing report is brilliant, but we need to keep that momentum going. And we do need to embed it completely
so
within
when
the council.
When do you think we ought to have been had it on the agenda, the climate change?
Well, we've got it on the agenda now. That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, a long time since, but it hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Whereas I think now people
can
are
I just,
taking it
can
more
I
seriously.
Just suggest...
I'm sure you're going to tell me, John, that you've been trying to put it on the agenda for a long time.
Yes.
But other people want to do that now, and I think, you know, the council should
Fine.
Be... The committee should be taking
Fine.
It seriously.
Fine, I have no problem with that at all. Right? But we haven't so far got the resources in here to deliver what we've already got as a pretty well unanimously across council agreed plan. So I'm not saying we don't start, but I don't think it's going to speed anything up in terms of the planet, because we've got a plan to build this building with no carbon calculation. We've got a plan to put flooding defences into Moulton Norton with no carbon calculation. We've got a cattle market in the pipeline with no carbon calculation so far. If we can't do that, that's the first step to any of it.
Surely the first step in addressing that is to actually put more resource and more...
Couldn't agree more,
you know,
but we've got...
Into
we
that
can't,
process.
I mean, we can, but we can go through climate change and say the first step, we need more resources. I don't know. I'm not suggesting we put it down the timescale, but I am suggesting that we've got a policy at the moment that the council is, without being rude, you know, struggling to get to. Is that accurate? Yeah. So we do it in separate bits, whatever. I don't mind. We can have three working parties next week. I'm comfortable with that. Somebody had a hand up. I didn't see who it was. Jim, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to have to go. It's about 25 to, I'm afraid, so apologies for being...
No, don't Jim. Don't, Jim. I was wanting to carve things out of this meeting, but I wasn't prepared to carve this out.
Listening to what you said and thinking back to full council, it seemed to me that this motion, if you like, reinforced the work that was going on. And I'm not quite sure how it does that, but it would seem the first thing that you would do as a scrutiny committee is to see what things were already going on, what things that the motion proposes coincide with the work or the proposals that you've already made, and then have an assessment of what parts are maybe not already underway. And in that sort of initial look-see, you know, you could get an idea of how much new work or how much reinforcement of the work that was already going on needs to be done. So, if you're saying that you should have an initial assessment of the three topics and then look at how much work could be done on those, I would support that.
I think you're very close to what was the proposal a fortnight ago, and that was that the plan should be drawn up. A plan in relation to what we are. We should measure where we're doing with that and what we've got to do, etc., and how we're going to put it in place. And that the motion for full council and those two should meet, as you're describing, on the 3rd of October. And I'm saying, I think that's too slow for looking at the policy. And I'm suggesting that we leave the officers going down the plan of delivering what we have agreed on so far, and that we look at what, between now and October, what that motion means. Because I've asked a lot of very experienced people what that motion means, because this isn't the only council that's got it. And so far, nobody's been able to give me some very good answers, but I'm sure they will. And when that happens, then we'll be able to. And I'm suggesting to fit in with the approach was to put the two into the same point. And I'm saying the climate change motion needs looking at to see what it means so that the two are there together, not saying, oh, we've got our wonderful plan, but what's this motion mean?
at the beginning of October. I'm saying we look at that between now and the beginning of October so that we know where we are. So, fitting in with you, but go back. Yep, whether it will work or not, I have no idea. And as we can't at the moment measure carbon for basic things, nobody else has. Sorry, I didn't hear you. I haven't got your microphone on, Jim. I can't.
Forgive me for having a bit of deja vu, but having done this for a long time, you know, our concern on carbon seems to reflect the state of our economics, to be honest. And when we feel well, then carbon, we're concerned about it. When we feel in recession, we suddenly sort of forget about it until the next time. Clearly, that's not the right way to do it in environmental terms, but...
You may be right.
I think about climate committees and those things. Yeah. We've had those debates, haven't we?
You may be exactly right, but I don't think the planet's got the time for us to go around another cycle. You may be exactly right as to what's happened so far. It's gone back to the 70s as this for waves coming through, but I don't think we've chanced for a wave.
John, I think... Just picking up on what Jim said and Di said, I think you, and then your own comments, I think you're right. This is important, and it's referred to as, but I think we have to get the cart and the horse the right way around, and the cart and the horse should be in the order of the existing council policy with this being referred to it. So I'm agreeing with what you're saying, that on a very short timescale, we need to actually look how this sits along, what the council's already passed. Yeah. I think that's the first thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So but we've got to drive it against what the council's already agreed to, not this. Second thing, and as you quite rightly say, the equalities is a legal requirement. We need to look at that. So that's got to be on the list. And I think you've already indicated with universal credit, as important as it is, I think we're at this stage of universal credit where what we need to do is to contact the appropriate authorities and ask them some questions. When we get those answers, we decide what to do with it. Because if they just kick us into the long grass...
We don't mind, but we don't.
There's nothing we can do about it. So that would be my suggestion, that we go this on the back of the policy, we go equalities, and then we ask the questions about universal credit and see where that takes us.
And I'm suggesting, which is only half a move away from Die, that we kick the equalities ones off first. And I'm talking week apart, and I'm not talking any length of time. We kick that one on first. We get the officer to go away and start doing some work on that. And we might even do on the same evening, whatever, but I think it should be a different group of people and a different officer, because it isn't... We want somebody with some expertise for the climate change one. We kick off the climate change second, and then we do the universal credit, each of these a week apart or whatever. We do the same as we've done with the others. Everybody from here is invited. We name a couple of people and then bring in people, and we've got somebody here who wasn't on scrutiny last year who contributed to the working party on climate change, virtually everyone. Other people claim in, Michael Cleary turned up for the odd one or two, etc. And if we do that on those three, it isn't too much of a burden, because some people might not want to come to some of them at all. Some might want to come to all. I don't mind. But we'll get some work, and I will work hard to get those going. But I don't think we're going to get... We're only talking August and September, because the first meeting is beginning of October. I think we'll get through... climate change, an analysis of what the motion means by then. I think we'll get equality fairly well down the track, and universal credit will be stuck in the sand. That would be my guess.
If that's a proposal, Chair,
yes.
If that's a proposal, I'd very happy second it.
Right, I'm proposing equalities first, and this is order of doing, not importance in any stretch of the way. Equalities first, climate change second, and universal credit third. Fine. See, you're out of order. Right, now then, the next thing is when for each of those dates. Who's going to be on that? I will be on all of them, because that's the chair doing the job. How are you about which, Kerry?
I'm quite happy to go on whichever one you want.
Which ones do you want to go on?
The universal credit.
universal credit, actually.
Right. Climate change, yes, no. Qualities, yes, no. Oh, you've talked yourself into it. Right, lovely. Right, I've got, that's two people sorted out. We only need three for each committee and then we're done. Di.
I'd like to be on the climate change one, surprise, surprise, and the equalities one.
So, somebody hopefully is writing this down better than I am. Right. We've had three different things so far. You go detail, right? Yeah. David? You do the universal credit. Right, brilliant. Thank you. David?
I think I must be on the climate change tonight, really, with what the weather's doing here.
Is it your fault?
You nearly want the top coat on.
Yeah, I know, it's not too warm, is it? Is there any that appeal to you? If you, nobody's under any pressure to be on, I'm just not wanting to miss anybody off. If you don't want to... Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Jim?
I'd like to move in the air.
And we'll inform you as we go. Right, fine. Nathan? Sorry, Jim, I didn't mean to cut you off. Universal credit. What, turn up late and go home early?
No. I'd like to be aware of when the climate change and the equalities are. And then based on last year's, I wasn't on the committee but came to more meetings than anybody else.
You'll
probably see a lot of me.
Right. And as we've got all this lot on tape, we should be able to sort that out afterwards. Right. Dates quickly before I start falling asleep or losing the will to whatever. Dates. Anybody manage a meeting next week for the equalities one? Pardon? Right. Well, I'm in the unfortunate position of not being able to drive anywhere, but not being able to do anything either way, so it's fine. Any night suits me. I don't think I have anything, unless there's a council meeting next week of any sort and shape, is there? Anybody got the council diary to hand? Sorry? Working party, you mean? Yes. Yes. Anything on next week? 20. Nothing till the beginning of August. Right, so should we go for Tuesday next week, Wednesday, whichever? Anybody got any objections to any of them? You can't make Tuesday. So we go Wednesday next week then. And that's equalities, and I can't make that. But I don't think that's your top
member
choice.
Next week.
Ah, hello, what member development? I can't ignore it. I haven't got it into my head yet. Is there something Wednesday night next week? I'm only on the Members Development Subcommittee, so it's quite likely I wouldn't know. Yeah, fine, good. Right, so that's equalities, and you're missing out, Di, I think, by the look of it, if you can't make anything next week. I don't know. We'll do times by phone when we get nearer to it, will we? The following week we'll be doing climate change, which is what I'm trying to get to. Di, give us a day the following week. Well, I've left my diary behind as well, which I'm cross with, but I can't. Yeah, but I'm trying to get Di to, as the seconder of the motion. A what? A doodle bell. What's a doodle bell?
It's a computer
thing. It sounds rude to me.
Yeah. Yes. What have you got, Di? Oh, you're just logging into it. That's fine, yes. Do what Kathy did and put the PIN number for one credit card into the other card and stood there saying, I am right, you silly machine. You sure, Di? Which is likely to be a good day the week after next? What week is that, somebody? But Wednesday's Di, did you say? Did you say Wednesday might be? Right. Ah, there is a member at last. At last. So shall we go for Thursday the 6th? If one's as good as another. Are you sure, Di? Because I'm nervous about doing this to you. Pardon? Thursday the 8th. Okay. It can't have been Wednesday the 5th then, but never mind. Thursday the 8th. Climate change. Yep. And then we're looking at Wednesday the 14th. Wednesday the 14th, madam? The Universal Credit. Yeah, that's fine by me, because that's the smallest number, is it not, Will, of anybody on the Universal Credit? Yes, and you may or may not. We'll let everybody know when everyone is, but I'm trying to make certain we've got two or three or four people there for all of them, and then we'll build. So what were you saying? Sorry, Tessie. Tuesday the 20th. Fine by me, Carrie. Anything else I need to do with that, or are we there with that lot? Right. We need to vote on the who's on the working parties.
No, on the approach.
We need to vote, yes, okay, I go with that, yes. So we need to vote that we are going to do equalities, climate change and universal credit, and I don't think we nail ourselves to the floor by saying which ones and which priorities and whatever, because I think we know where we are with that lot. So I will move that our topics for this topics to be review topic, the scrutiny review topics to be chosen are equalities, climate change, in reference to the motion from full council, and universal credit. And we may slot in another meeting because we've got a gap there, I think, when I get my head around this on a diary, before universal credit comes, so we might put another climate change of another one in. Will?
Sorry, can I be a complete pedant and ask, we might consider an amendment to your words just then?
Yeah. And on, whoa, Will's wanting to amend.
On the, you said climate change with reference to the motion.
For full council, yeah.
Should that be climate change, the relationship between the existing council policy and the motion?
I didn't deliberately word it that, but we can't ignore the policy we've got.
That's exactly why I'm making the suggestion,
yeah,
John.
I don't think we would and we couldn't ignore what we've already agreed, but we've been requested to look at what I proposed.
Okay, as long I've made the point,
I'm glad you made me think, because it made me check it in my mind. No, I think we've got it the right way. Probably more of chance than anything else, but yes. Right.
Can we just rerun that vote?
Yes, we've got to do it. I haven't voted yet. So can you read it out, Will, please?
Or do you want me to go through it again?
Wait,
did you write it down?
I didn't write
it down. No, okay, that's fine. No, that's not a criticism. That the scrutiny review topics chosen are 1, equalities, 2, climate change, 3, universal credit.
That's 7 votes for and 1 abstention.
And can you make a note to go after that, that the working parties were the chair and vice chair and various members of the committee? And I don't think we need to vote on that. It's what we are. Right. Motion on notice from full council on June 27th of June. I don't know that we have to do anything with that now, because I think it's been done. We now come to decisions from other committees. And I now have to plead guilty that I have called in the two decisions made by P&R on one on this building, this replacement, the hub, whatever you want to call it, and two on the flood defences for Moulton, Norton and Old Moulton. And the reason for doing that was complete lack of any carbon calculation. We now have to decide as a committee what we're going to do with that. And I'm now going to underline why I've done it rather than what it says on the call-in paper. I've done it because I found it totally unacceptable that we could have massive decisions like particularly the hub and the rebuilding of this building or the refurbishment of this building being made without a carbon calculation. The other half of the coin is I don't want us to stop us doing anything at all, no meetings, no nothing, until we've measured everything. So on that basis it was saying to the officers basically it is council policy to measure carbon, and therefore please will you. But not wanting to delay things and slow things down, I then looked at how this committee could then handle it. And we've got the decision on the building. The P&R actually noticed, basically, that it hadn't got all this climate information because it was asking for it, not necessarily in climate change terms, but it was asking for all environmental stuff to go with it for when it came back to P&R. And as we've said, it's got to have a climate analysis here, and when it comes back to P&R, they've asked for it. I think that's enough. I think that'll sort it, if it's going to sort. And if it's not going to sort, we'll call it back in again. The other one is on its way, and P&R didn't spot this at all, that they hadn't any carbon calculation, so there was questionable on this one as they were good on the first one. I'm suggesting that we advise, and we'll have to have a wording for this, I hope Will's got something, to say that we're not going to ask for an extra P&R meeting to discuss this. We're going to ask that when their recommendation goes to full council, that there is a full carbon calculation, arrives at full council with it. So that means no extra meetings, no extra carbon used, no delay in the timetable, but it is saying clearly, up with this we won't put. And I hope before you take me out in the car park and deal with me appropriately that I've got that roughly right, because we can do whatever we want now, but that's where I think we should be going, Will.
I think that's a very balanced, sensible approach, Chair.
I don't often get accused of that, but
In the circumstances, I'm not absolutely certain in a perfect world I would use the word carbon calculation. Complete lack of carbon recognition of the impact of carbon or whatever, but I think your approach is absolutely right. I don't think we need to hold anything up. I think we just need to make sure that everybody learns their lesson on this one.
That was my approach, and if you could have helped me with a better words than carbon calculation, I would have been delighted, because I sat there with pen poised for some time, but I thought it was the best I could do, but if somebody's got something better, please come up with. Anybody else, or are we going to go down that route? I think the message should be out there. I mean, I think without looking to see whether any officers are nodding or not, but I think it's probably gone out to the officers that we want carbon measured. Will?
Could it actually say without complete lack of any consideration of the council's carbon policy?
Well, I can't alter that word. I've called it in. That word's published.
I appreciate that. I was just thinking to unlock it going forward. We can talk about it later.
Right. What wording? Have you got some wording, Will? Because I've been playing with this in the week as to what the wording would be.
I've got it. I'll read it out if that's okay.
Yes, please, Will. Yeah. Sorry, Di.
So does that mean that they will both go for approval at the next full council? Is that what you're saying? Or are you saying, well, for discussion?
No, I'm saying, if you really want the next verse, I don't think that one should have been, and this is a personal view, or maybe a Liberal group view, that the decision on what we did and which was our preferred option for the buildings, etc., should have just gone to P&R. But it was down as a Part A item, and therefore it's only going to P&R. I will be lobbying, personally, the Liberals will be lobbying, and be delighted if you joined us, to say that that is too big a decision to even decide in principle, and it should be please going to full council. But it's got to go away for the environmental stuff to be looked at, to come back to P&R. So there's some time before, and it's not tomorrow's P&R, I understand correctly, so it'll be coming to the P&R after tomorrow, and that needs lobbying before that point to say, look, we think it should be going to full council. I didn't pick that up. There's enough on, it'll only cause too much confusion. So one is going back to P&R, the building one, and the flooding one is going to full council, and we're asking for the climate information, any better, Will? For the climate information to go with it, to full council, and the climate invitation information to go with the other one to P&R.
So it's fairly unlikely that information will be ready in time for the next full council.
We'll have to wait and see, which was back to my original slight difference with you of saying, hang on, this is wonderful, but I'm not even sure that we've got the, I don't like using this in climate terms, but I'm not thinking we've got the engine started yet gone anywhere. Yes, please.
So, the wording we've got at the moment is that the overview and scrutiny committee notes the two items called in from policy and resources on the 4th of July, and that the reports considered that that committee did not include an assessment of climate change impact as required by the decision of full council on the 11th of April 2019. The committee notes that policy and resources committee requested information relating to climate change impact as part of its decision in minute 27 on the item with regards to the financial assessment public services hub options for Rydale House. The overview and scrutiny committee therefore agrees to make no further recommendations in relation to this item. The committee notes that minute 28 on the flooding for Moulton Norton and Old Moulton flood alleviation scheme is a referral to full council on the 5th of September 2019. The ONS committee requests officers to provide information on climate change impact is made available ahead of this meeting so that a fully informed decision can be made by full council.
I think that's covered 90% of it, except I think there should be some phrase of calculation or carbon in there. It isn't just this will have a better or a worse impact. It needs to be measured somehow. Yes, Doug?
My question stands really, possibly to Tony, is that timed for us to get those calculations together before the full council, or should we just be saying full council but not a specific date?
Through you, Chair. To be absolutely honest with you, Councillor, I've no idea whether that would be enough time or not, because, and I say that because I don't know the extent to which we would have to do research work in order to come up with some calculations. I know that's not a satisfactory answer, but that is a truthful answer at this stage. It's still very much in the infancy. I have been doing some digging around with other authorities to ask them how they approach it, but at this time I really don't know how much of officers' time would need to be spent in trying to provide meaningful information for members.
My suspicion is that you wouldn't have time before the 5th of September, because it would also involve working with the county, because obviously it's their bigger plan as the lead flood authority. So I think we should take out the reference to the 5th of September.
Part of me quite there's part of me quite likes that, because the only problem is it doesn't fit in with the not delaying it, but I agree with you.
You want to get it right. Then
yeah,
you have to
I understand that.
Right.
And just going back to be the other thing with Will, I think there should be something like carbon calculation, because climate change is too woolly, but I don't know how
I think the word's absolutely right, if I may say so, the climate change impact. Because you can't.
Yes, can you read it again?
If it says carbon change impact, then that implies there's got to be some numbers.
That.
Yeah. Talk about climate change impact. It just makes it.
But
nice.
What units do you measure it in?
The same units that you measure anything else in carbon. I mean, impact implies that you've got to be able to demonstrate.
I'm just concerned that we need to be measuring costs in pounds and climate change in carbon units, but whatever, it'll do for now.
And the mitigation that can be made to negate that impact.
Yeah, well, possibly. Right, just read again a bit round the date, because I quite like what Di's saying, because if we don't put a date in it, it nails. And it means they will have to come back and say we haven't done. I'm happy with that.
Yeah. So just the second half of that. The committee notes that minute 28 on the funding for Malton Norton and Malton Flood Alleviation Scheme is a referral to full council. ONS committee requests officers to ensure information on climate change impact is available ahead of this meeting so that a fully informed decision can be made.
Ahead of which meeting?
Well, it says ahead of this meeting, but ahead of the...
It's available ahead of it going to full council. Can we leave that, because I think we know what we mean, can we leave that at this time of night to sort? And if you talk to me, Will, and we know exactly what we're saying, and I'm agreeing with you. You've moved an amendment to an amendment, and I'm sure that's totally up the pole, and but we know where we are and we've agreed on it. Anybody disagreeing with doing that? No.
And you're not setting a specific time for this when
yes,
it goes
that's
back to
what
full
I'm
council.
Saying. But equally, and we can come back and review if it delays something until 3 years hence, and it doesn't want to be delayed for 3 years hence, we can stop calling it in or whatever. Right? Can we move that wording as as agreed?
Yep.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you. Good. Keep moving. Is that it? Yeah, three, four.
It's unanimous, Chair.
Can I ever so gently cheat here? Has anybody got anything on the work programme that is urgent and warrants discussion at this time? No, good. And if I did have urgent business at the beginning, I have now forgotten it. So we haven't any urgent business left. Can I thank you all? I don't think we could have done that much quicker. I think everybody's had a crack at everything. Thank you for the working parties, because that's where we're going to get some work done. Lovely.